Bill Gates just handed us the next chapter of the globalist eugenicist perfect storm playbook on a silver platter.
Water shortages could be the biggest mass mortality event the world has ever seen. I am talking billions of people dying.
What the?
The only way we ensure people remain safe is by being invested in the United States Water Reserve.
Pair that with his well-documented purchases of farmland and water rights across the American West.
You're reporting Bill Gates started buying land in 2013 through a web of limited liability shell companies across the country. Tell us what he's got.
I mean, there is a lot of land, and it's over about 18 different states, right? So we're talking about 70,000 acres in North Louisiana around the Delta region, 14,000 acres in Florida, over 40,000 acres in Arkansas, over 14,000 acres in Washington. So it really just spans the country, and it is a lot of land. Local farmers I spoke to in South Georgia and North Florida said that he's doing the same thing that Big Ag did before he got there, which is using a lot of fertilizer that leaches into the rivers, causes big algae blooms, and actually is very ruinous for the habitats of manatees and fish.
Plus the exploding thirst of AI data centers that are draining aquifers dry and the pattern snaps into focus. Manufacture the crisis, control the supply, and thin the herd under the banner of saving the planet.
The animals that can eat grass have very unusual stomachs that have these bacteria that are methanogenic in there. And so they leak natural gas, both out the front and the back. And so people have said, well, let's change the hay or throw some things in there. And it's been, nobody knows how to get rid of.
No one knows how to get cows to stop farting.
Exactly.
This is the same oligarch who spent years pushing experimental injections.
If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus.
How ready was the world for this, say on a scale of 1 to 10, and how about the U.S.?
The U.S. gets a low score.
Now positioning himself as the gatekeeper of the one resource no human can live without for more than a few days.
My name is Doug Seavey. I build data centers. I own data centers. I built the first private data center in the state of Iowa. And everything that Google is telling you is BS.
Hi, I'm Ben Townsend. I lead infrastructure strategy and sustainability here at Google. Google's helping foster a new era of technological progress, and we are committed to doing so responsibly. You probably already know that data centers need energy to operate, but you might be surprised to learn that they generate heat and often rely on water for cooling. At Google, we understood early on that as the use of digital services grew, so too would the need for water to cool data centers. That's why we set out to find a responsible, sustainable way to manage this vital resource.
I have a data center right now that's running in Hiawatha, and I have been there 14 years and have never used 1 gallon of water. What Google isn't telling you is they don't want to use the technology because it costs more. They're going to burn through the water, and when it's done, and they don't care. Then they'll put the money in. When I called you and talked to you, and I said, you should really help, let me help you, I never heard anything back. And I warned you. I said, my well goes dry, I'm coming after you because I know what's going on. And you can't do this. You guys have to say no water. They don't have to have it.
UN reports on water bankruptcy and data center consumption provide the scientific cover. While Gates and his fellow Davos acolytes buy the actual aquifers and dictate distribution.
Get off your couch and go protest the nearest data center coming near you, because if you don't, in 10 years, this, it's going to be gone, guys. We need water to live.
Americans still clinging to the idea that these people mean well need to wake the hell up. You can stockpile food, guns, and gold, but without water, you're finished in 72 hours. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
And it's time for humanity to stand up and say, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this, but you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
The next chapter in the war for humanity's minds begins now at Alex Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy.
1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Yes, we have a lot of updates with Iran. Again, once again, not going to be a surprise to you. A lot of conflicting information coming in. We'll try to figure out what is actually happening here. But just to give you a breakdown, and of course the biggest story today is the continuing and utter collapse of approval for Donald Trump as we get closer and closer to the midterms and closer to just wasting everything we fought for. And that's just what I felt kept being re-emphasized. Like, if you're watching the Alex Jones show today, Trump threatens to bomb U.S. ally Oman as Iran agreement expires. Yeah, no, things are going off the rails, but in a very big way. We'll get to that in just a second. But I was watching the Alex Jones show today, and it was just a good reminder of just how insane absolutely everything got over the Joe Biden administration. And obviously, we bring it up all the time, talking about all of the crimes that were committed against us and how they're going unpunished. But I still think a lot of us have maybe forgotten just how bad it was, just how insane the left has become, just how abusive the government was to conservatives over that time. And it just painted a picture of this cascade towards tyranny of everything that we were subjected to, and just the ridiculous, the disinformation board they tried to create, the persecutions, obviously the lawfare that went on, throwing people in prison. And it was like, we thought we elected somebody who understood the assignment, who understood the seriousness of what was going on. And we thought that because Trump himself was subjected to it. And this is one of those things that, you know, people now are talking a lot, you know, if you could go back in time, you know, would you still vote for Trump? And, you know, as Alex pointed out several times today, like, well, what Trump was saying was right. And for the first, you know, couple of months, he was on the ball and we were supportive of that. But then he went completely off the rails about a year ago. And I agree that that's more or less the timeline. But, you know, it wasn't just believing what Trump said. It was watching for 4 years as Joe Biden tried to throw Trump in prison. And so it wasn't like, you know, Trump just said he was going to do this stuff. He like has to do this stuff or his whole family's going to go to jail, right? Which is what makes it also utterly baffling why he's chosen to squander the first 2 years of his administration. He, out of anybody, should understand the seriousness of the nature of our enemy. And so it just feels like we were like on the precipice. We're about to go over where it's just like they're going to pack the Supreme Court. They're going to it's going to be full on tyranny. And people are posting, you know, reminding people of what happened during COVID and, you know, what that would look like with flock cameras in addition, right? People were reposting articles or tweets from 2020 where, you know, Kentuckian officials will be providing the identity of everybody filmed going in and out of the church, violating lockdown this Sunday. They were doing that they were criminalizing going to church. Like, we've already been there. Donald Trump, this is like the last ditch ever. So, like, this is the scene in the movie where it's like the bad guys have been winning. They're about to just, like, finally crush the hero. The heroes, the good guys, are about to be utterly destroyed. You know, it's like the scene, it's like Helm's Deep, right? It's like the orcs are like about, for those 4 years, the orcs are at the wall, they're blowing holes in the gates, they're storming in, we're falling back and falling back, and then it's like Trump is like Gandalf writing, actually, this would be hilarious. This would be a very good AI video, actually, is you have the Battle of Helm's Deep in the second Lord of the Rings movie, The Two Towers, and you have Gandalf coming over, you know, the first ray of dawn in the last second. It's like the most glorious thing. And then you watch that far shot as Gandalf comes down that steep incline and all the, you know, riders behind him. And then you've got like the orc army and the wall, and they come down the hill and then they just go off and they just run the other way. And everybody in Helm's Deep is like, where are they going? Where are they going? And Gandalf and the whole horde they come over the crest, they go down the hill, and they go around the corner and off to fight Iran. That's what this is like. That's the experience here. People are like, but we won though, but Gandalf showed up. It's like, okay, yeah, Gandalf showed up in the last second, and then he and all of the people he brought just ran off in a different direction and didn't actually help us do anything. So, like, why not? Why not? And so when you look at it like that, to me, it becomes pretty obvious that, you know, Trump made a deal of some sort, because why is he not worried about being thrown into prison? Why is he not concerned? Why is he actually, like, aggressively, like, selling access to his Truth Social, just insider training with abandon and bragging about it and selling access to it? Why does he not fear the left's reprisals? And is it because he can pardon his entire family like Joe Biden did? And is that why he's not going after anybody that Joe Biden pardoned? Because he actually wants to use that for his family? And if that's the case, good for them. What's going to happen to the rest of us? You can't pardon everybody. But you know that the Democrats are going to actually charge people for, like, just supporting Donald Trump. So this is the scene. So there's Trump, 2024. We win the victory just before the wave of darkness, you know, folds over our head and drowns us forever. Trump arrives. We got to leave it up. This is the part. This is the actual part. And the crew takes it down at the moment of triumph. What is this? It's happening again. Now everybody's rug pulling me. But I'm serious. I just want to envision if we could get the shot of him if they run down the hill and instead of slamming into the ranks of the orcs, they just skirt right around him and just leave and just go, they go off to fight Iran. And everybody's like, well, what the hell? We're all dying at Helm's Deep. And they're like, you don't understand. We've been at war with Iran for 47 years though. Yeah, but we've been at war with Iran for 47 years and Iran cannot get the One Ring. Yeah, that's exactly how it worked. Unfortunately for us, that is exactly how it worked. So again, I cannot rationalize. But there are other examples as well, like the fact that Donald Trump. So I don't know if people remember this. It's a little bit convoluted, but Donald Trump, after his first administration, was charged with revealing classified documents, and I think this was a real charge. I don't think this was all a big game. I think, you know, the Democrats really were trying to get Trump on whatever they could. I think Letitia James was absolutely trying to destroy him. And I'm sure he didn't like having to dedicate years of his life to defending himself against the most ridiculous and, like, illegal charges you could ever imagine. I think all these things were more or less real. I think he, you know, really did lose the money from it and really did lose face from all this. But regardless, they charge him with this stuff. They charge him with, you know, exposing classified information to people who, you know, don't have clearances. And as evidence of this claim, they provide a taped recording of Donald Trump, a hidden, you know, secretly obtained recording of Donald Trump talking to two reporters, I believe. And you can hear him shuffling around paper. And he says, let me show you this. Let me show you this thing. And he gives him a piece of paper and he says, look at this. This is a war plan to attack Iran. They wanted me to sign this. They wanted me to do this. Can you believe it? Can you believe they came and presented me with this war with Iran proposition? But I said no. So it's like, okay. So they charge him with classified information. So it's like, it's not, this wasn't Trump coming out and saying, I'm the peace president or I'm not going to go to war with Iran. This was a secretly obtained recording of him talking about how he had already rejected war with Iran during his first administration. So somebody make this make sense. So again, people are like, oh, you know, you thought, you know, you believed Trump. He was lying. It's like the circumstances that Trump was in would incentivize him to do what we wanted. The fact that things that we'd seen in the past showed, and it wasn't from him. It wasn't propaganda from him. It was his enemies secretly recording him. You know, they published this because they thought it made him look bad. I made a video at the time of being like mocking this, being like, he showed classified information about the war plan with Iran. And how the appropriate response would be like, the war plan with what? No, but it was a classified document. It's like, yeah, I get it was classified, but it was a classified document of the military trying to get us into war with Iran. That's actually the bigger deal. Actually, that's the bigger deal. Him showing it is not the big deal. It's the fact that the president had to like fight back against the Pentagon who was trying to get him to go. So back then, if it was like, why do you think Trump will avoid war with Iran? It was like, because he did in the first administration. And we have the evidence, not from him, but from somebody secretly recording him, stuff they released to make Trump look bad. Now, unless it's the most sophisticated psyop of all time, where Trump is pretending to reject the war with Iran and pretending to get charged with, and it's like, that's just not how deep psyops go. That's like 15 layers deep. That's not how any of this works, but maybe it is, because I have no other explanation for how he goes from actively rejecting the war with Iran in the first administration to spearheading it in the second. But obviously that was a mistake. I think that was a mistake. And the only thing that explains any of this is Trump must have made a deal of some sort, made a deal with the Democrats, made a deal with Israel, whoever, basically saying, I'm just going to do whatever you want for these 4 years, as long as I can make money. And as long as when it's over, my whole family, isn't charged. You don't bother us. We can just go back to being rich people. Maybe Trump will buy a tower in Tel Aviv and move there. And I legitimately wouldn't be surprised if that was amongst his plans. And all this is to say that, like, Trump has failed. Trump has failed. He's going to continue to fail for the next 2 years. We're seeing some, you know, aggressive maneuvers here or there. We'll talk about the SPLC. We'll talk about some of the, you know, border militarization that's going on. But Trump came in at the tail end of a 4-year saga, an odyssey of oppression and abuse from the Biden administration. And everybody in America recognizing we are going over a cliff here. And trusting Trump to be the person who would not just steer us away from flying off the cliff, but actually understood who was driving us towards the cliff and would actually turn around and fight back against those people. Not because we believed him and were suckers, but because, like, his future is tied up in this as well. Yeah, Trump says he could run for prime minister in Israel, claiming 99% approval rating. Yeah, not anymore. That was from May 21st. Yeah, that was when you were still fully committed to war with Iran. Ever since you backed off a little bit, you're the enemy now. But I just want to point, just to remind everybody, like, it's not like Trump got in and we're just like, you know, everything's fine. And like, Trump is just like, hey, as long as he keeps the stock market ticking up, everything else is great. He came in on a wave of anti-establishmentarianism, anti-authoritarianism, that believed and expected him to take a giant machete to all these people who have done all these things, from the mail-in ballots. And he talked about all of it and expressed all of it and was the champion of all of it, and then has just not done it. So, like, that's the problem. That's the issue. because people want us to be satisfied with whatever we get. They want us to be satisfied that he closed the border. But, like, that's not enough, though. They flooded us specifically because of Trump in a lot of ways, making immigration such a big deal, activating the left on this. Trump's one of the best presidents for Israel, majority of Israelis say. I'm sure he is. 47% of Israel, 73% of Israelis describe Trump as better than average, with 49 describing him as one of the best in the history for Israel. That means that he is more than twice as popular in Israel than he is in America. Because he spends about twice the amount of time on Israel than America. So again, just this idea that you're panicking and, you know, all this stuff. It's like, no, we all should be panicking, to be honest with you. We were panicking in 2024. We did understand that all of this had gone on and that we needed a, you know, powerful executive to get us justice and to set us back on the right track. You didn't do that. So now the communists are going to take over. And I don't think it's even an accident. I think he made a deal, to be honest with you. I think he made a deal. Most U.S. voters say they're worse off under Trump. Democrats lead Republicans on economy just months ahead of midterm elections. Most U.S. voters say they've become worse off under President Trump, according to FT polling, revealing mounting discontent with the president's handling of the economy and cost of living. With less than 3 months until November's midterm elections, the nationwide poll conducted by Focal Data found that over 53% of registered voters said their finances had deteriorated since Trump returned to office in January 2025. Yeah, that's all. I guess that's all the voters who use money. That's all the voters who are aware of the economic situation because they use money to buy things, I guess. I don't know who feels like they're in a better financial situation. Unless, I guess, you're heavily invested in the stock market, because that keeps going up regardless of the actual quality of life here in America. Massive Trump merchandise store goes out of business because nobody is buying anything. We're not busy of the store, one employee of the Trump store admitted. The store is located on Interstate 40 near Knoxville, Tennessee, and has an exterior with a massive Trump billboard, banners, and a brick outhouse labeled Democrat Superstore. Makes clear what type of goods this shop is slinging. But now the shop is selling off its remaining inventory at 50% discount, Slate reports. It's going out of business, and its owner, identified as William Bill Hayes, admitted the closure is due to lack of customers. He made the admission to Slate while he was pushing back against another story published in Knox News that he claimed he was shutting down because he was retiring and moving south. The girl that reported that did not know what she was talking about. Hayes reportedly said, "I'm not retiring. I'm not moving down. But we own two condos in Naples, Florida. Yes, I'm old and I'm 80. I don't own any other businesses. I don't know why the hell she said I was 80 anyway." Poor guy. But yeah, he says they're not busy anymore. He noted the shop used to be popular. During its busiest day, had 86 people. Dan said the business was good the day after conservative podcaster Charlie Kirk was shot and killed, and the day after Trump launched his war on Iran. He recalled the days following the assassination attempt on Trump in July 2024, saying it was huge for business. People waiting to walk to the door, everyone was going choo-choo Trump train, and this whole building was moving, he said. I mean, it was unbelievable. Yeah, but not anymore, though. Not really anymore. And it's just, it's emblematic. It's symbolic of the entire Trump movement. The energy, the excitement, the belief has all evaporated, essentially, and people are looking elsewhere. Obviously, he's even talking about running for a third term in 2028. Totally ridiculous. But that's the point, right? Is that we are going to just, I mean, the Democrats are, as we speak, they're still doing more for, like, their own side than Republicans are. Even Republicans aren't actually punishing the Democrats, aren't actually doing anything to progress the stated Trump agenda that he actually ran on. But the Democrats are, like, gathering data, doing pre-investigation so that once they're in power, they can just hit the ground running with lawsuits and everything else. And by the way, I mean, the current plan is they aren't even trying to like impeach Trump right out. They are playing like a long-term game where they essentially are just like letting Trump commit a bunch of financial crimes and plan on just destroying him. And again, the thing that doesn't make any sense is it's like, here's an idea that kind of explains what Trump is doing. Trump made a deal. Trump said, you know, made a deal with somebody, handshake agreement. Who knows who he would have made this with. But like I said, you know, to say, look, I'll go to war with Iran. I'll do that for you. Just like I need to know that the IRS is never going to audit my books. Remember, he got that agreement. Apparently it's been challenged, but like then the IRS was like, yeah, we're never going to audit Trump or his family ever again. It's like, yeah, okay. Sounds like he made a deal to do certain things in return for not going through what happened in the 4 years under Biden. Now that could explain at least to some part, and it's supposition, but it's valid, I think, in explaining some of the inconsistencies that we see. The missing piece of this puzzle is why would Trump think that he can make a deal with these people? That's the part that doesn't make any sense. I mean, really, none of it makes any sense. His actions make no sense. His behavior makes no sense. Not only just because it's contradictory to what he said on the campaign, but because he's going to be thrown into prison at the end of all of this, along with his family. The Democrats are giddy. They're excited. They're telling everybody that this is what they plan on doing. So what deal does he think he made? And does he think the deal will be stuck to? I have a feeling that Trump's basically been assured, as long as he goes to war with Iran, and as long as he allows Flock and the data centers and the AI control grid to be imposed, as long as he doesn't get rid of too many immigrants, fulfill too many of his promises, as long as the shot callers in the intelligence agencies and the, you know, financial corporations, as long as they're untouchable, as long as they don't go to jail for releasing COVID or stealing the election, as long as he doesn't do any of that stuff, then he'll be allowed to keep his money and sail off into the sunset. And I have the feeling that at the end of all of this, he's going to think it's clever and be like, Joe Biden pardoned his family. Well, I'm going to pardon my family too. And the Democrats are going to go, that's cute. You're not allowed to. You're all going to jail. He's going to go, but I didn't throw Biden's pardons in jail. And they're going to go, yeah, you're an idiot. You should have probably. Now you're going to jail. Preemptive pardons? That doesn't work. That doesn't exist. But we let Biden do it. Yeah, because you're stupid. We're not stupid. We go after our enemies. Like, the left is going to actually do it. And I genuinely think Trump's going to try to pardon his whole family, and to expect Democrats to go along with that, you got to be an idiot. So this is the thing. This is why it's also baffling. This is why it wasn't even about believing Trump in 2024. It was understanding that the way the forces were arranged, Trump himself was incentivized to do what we wanted. Why he hasn't done it and what he expects to happen at the end of his administration, I honestly can't tell you, because it makes no sense. Yeah, not just because he's contradicting himself, not just, oh my gosh, Trump's a liar, I had no idea, but oh my gosh, Trump is ruining this opportunity, wasting this last chance we have before the lights go out. And he seems to be totally oblivious to the fact that he himself is going to be the number one target of destruction once he's out of office. Crazy.
I'm extremely excited about this. You know, we always have the strongest turmeric at thealexjonesstore.com, and the capsules are 95% curcuminoid. That is the strongest in the market. So the very same great manufacturer that made this made it as a liquid tincture, the strongest on the market, and even better than powder because there's even better absorption. Ultimate turmeric. And it's got a bunch of other amazing ingredients. They're known to supercharge turmeric. I know so many people that Advil doesn't work when they have a sprained ankle or arthritis, but when they take our brand of turmeric, they go, this is works better than Advil. And you know, including family I've had that's like, well, this pill's not as big as my other turmeric. My other turmeric helps, but I got to take a bunch of the pills. I said, just take two of these. And whether it's my dad or my wife or anybody, they're like, wow, this worked better. Why? Because those aren't concentrates. Those are raw turmeric. This raw turmeric is 4 to 5% curcuminoid, 95, okay? So we're very excited about this tincture, just a half dropper a day, so good for your whole body, 95% curcuminoids. The liquid is better absorption. And this is 60 servings per bottle, so 2-month supply. And right now, if you're a subscriber, you just sign up to lock in at 50%, canceling time for free. You lock in at 50% off. It's 25% off for everybody. You just buy it straight off at thealexshowstore.com. The new Ultimate Liquid Turmeric Tincture. And it's got a bunch of other really cool stuff in it as well. Not just concentrated turmeric root, curcumin lunga, the strongest part, but ginger root concentrated, zingbeer officinal is the, I guess, the Latin for it, and pepperdine concentrated black pepper extract. All of it synergistically works together. 250 milligrams and just a half dropper of the turmeric concentrate, 12 milligrams of the concentrated ginger, and 100 of the pepperdine black pepper extract. Very strong, an amazing product. The newest product at thealexjonesstore.com. Liquid tincture, superior absorption. Pepperdine inclusion is the difference maker. Turmeric without pepperdine is largely wasted. Most budget companies do that. Natural enzymes and things in the concentrated pepper get into the cells quicker. Triple ingredient synergy, turmeric, ginger, concentrated black pepper, 60 servings, vegan friendly, GMO free and gluten free, free of major allergies, natural flavors only, no additives or synthetic flavorings, and it funds this operation. And anybody getting the products, the other great supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, the t-shirts, the collectible coins, they're about to sell out, the amazing shower filters of the highest rated, taking out the most toxins of any brand, at an incredibly low price, should be a VIP. Every month in your profile, it charges you $30. You can cancel anytime for free. You instantly, when you're charged, get $40 in your profile to spend. Special deals, special offers, and sales on top of all the other sales. Everyone should be a VIP. And if you're worried about some products that sell out from time to time, just become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on all future orders of that product as long as you stay subscribed. Cancel anytime. So become a VIP, become a subscriber, and lock it in with no commitment from you, but it's locked in for you if you choose to keep it locked in at thealexjonesstore.com. New Liquid Ultimate Turmeric, the strongest on the market. So good for your whole body and inflammation. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
You want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Welcome back, folks. Just to give you an idea of how thoroughly Donald Trump has failed this time around, from Dominique Michael Trippi, D. Michael Trippi on X, Trump net approval with Hispanic men has fallen a staggering 51 points from plus 10 in early 2025 to negative 41 currently, according to CNN SSRS polling data. Which, and then you've got Robert Seffer underneath saying, so what? He ended child sex changes. Good. Yeah. I'll, you know, credit him with that. Abolish DEI and affirmative action. Not really, actually. Sealed the border shut. Yeah, kind of. And there has been a BLM or Antifa race riot since he took office. Well, there also weren't any BLM or race riots once Biden took office either. So it's not really a great one. I mean, Charlie Kirk's got killed. And also there were burning entire Tesla dealerships for months on end. And there were gigantic illegal alien race riots where they were throwing cinder blocks at cars in LA for weeks on end. And there were the permanent Antifa camps set up outside the ICE facility, multiple ICE facilities in New Jersey and Minnesota and everywhere else. It's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? It's been like continual race riots since Trump got back into office the second time. And ending DEI and affirmative action is great on paper, but I really feel like there's a disconnect with people who think that Trump is doing something real right now, because he's not. He's not doing anything real. The Supreme Court decided against DEI, and the federal orders went out saying you're not allowed to do DEI. Ever since then, I've seen probably a dozen videos, undercover videos, people going into their university and saying, we still do DEI, right? And they're like, yeah, of course. Some of them occasionally say, well, we have to call it something different now, but it's all the same. Because that's the way our world works now is, you know, the orders come down from on high. The lawful authorities make a decision. But a lot of people just sort of understand, like, they're not going to enforce it, so I'm not going to follow it. I don't really care. What are they going to do? Come in and check if we have DEI policies? We'll just say we don't. If there's no enforcement mechanism, if you don't actually do investigations and then punish people who violate the law as a lesson for everybody else that wants to violate the law, you get rid of DEI or you go to jail. If that's not the threat, they don't care. They don't believe you. They're not worried. They break the law. So what's actually happened? I mean, the DEI that was implemented, the ESG scores, the anti-white terrorist attack on our financial institutions over the last several years, like that's damage that is still being done to America. It hasn't been reversed. It hasn't been undone in any way. There have been absolutely no measures to not only make sure it doesn't continue into the future, but actually provide for, you could call it real affirmative action, where people that actually were discriminated against actually do get some sort of, you know, retroactive recompense for that. It's never happened. So now you've just got everybody that was kicked out of the corporate world, all the white guys kicked out of the corporate world in the last 4 years, replaced by people who believe in DEI in their hearts and impose DEI without even being conscious of the fact they're doing that. Yeah, this is actually a problem. It's actually a gigantic problem that we should be concerned about. But it's okay, right? We won, against all odds, the election. We achieved victory. We were given, if nothing else, a 4-year respite, a 4-year chance to counterattack, a 4-year chance to like pull the United States out of the fire before it's burned to ash and try desperately to stomp that fire out. We haven't done any of that. The Republican Party, despite 10 straight years of Donald Trump showing them the path to victory, showing them what's needed to gain not just support and enthusiasm from their own followers, but bring along a whole chunk of people that have never been Republican along with it. And yet the Republican Party, occupied by neocons, refused to change. Donald Trump himself refused to, you know, sweep in that revolutionary spirit behind him. He seemed like he did at first. So, you know, a few people like Marjorie Taylor Greene swept in on that wave. Look what's happened since then. So the Republicans and Trump himself, they seem to recognize now in this late hour that there's a threat of communism, that maybe, you know, all of these young people going over to Mamdani or AOC, it's not a fluke. They're not idiots. It represents a real political movement, a shift, a tidal shift towards something utterly horrific and permanent once it gets in place. And yet one of our strongest soldiers, one of the best Republicans, I'm not even being ironic, like one of the guys that every time I see a video of him, I'm like, he's old, but he's all we got. Chuck Grassley, clip number 3 here. The Democrats are running socialists. They're making TikTok videos with their smiling, dancing foreigners, celebrating, bragging about the fact that once they're in power, they're going to get rid of the Supreme Court and they're going to get rid of the Senate and they're going to punish everybody that ever helped Trump do anything. And they're going to pass disinformation laws and hate speech laws. And they're going to use Flock and the data centers to do it. And from an outsider perspective, it looks like they've got, you know, a pretty good display of the energy, the youth, the vitality, the zeitgeist, as it were. Meanwhile, Here's the best Republican on the Hill, clip three.
With the demise of Beth, I thought I'd be able to use my 1966 Electrolux, but it doesn't work either. So I'm going to have to wait until somebody gives me a used Hoover. I thought this backup that my mother bought me in the 1960s would work until I got a new Hoover, but it just isn't going to work out that way.
Thanks for the update. Is Beth his wife? Who's Beth? Who is Beth? I don't understand. Did he have a nickname for a different vacuum? He starts off that video saying, since the death of Beth, I've had to use this vacuum. Who is Beth, your wife? Who is Beth? What is Beth? What a weird way to start that conversation. Without any context, since the death of Beth, I've been using this vacuum, but now it's not working. So it's like, not only is it the fact that this man is old as the United States itself, not just the fact that he was a full grown, I heard Kyle Serafin say today, the man was 33 years old when he received this. So he was 3 years younger than me when he received this vacuum in 1966. What the hell are you talking about? And not only is it like him bragging about having a, I mean, what even is that math? 60 year old vacuum. Okay. So he's got a vacuum nearly twice as old as me, but it doesn't work. It doesn't even work. Oldest U.S. Senator, 92, mourns yet another vacuum. 60. After losing his beloved Beth last week, Chuck Grassley now revealed that his backup vacuum is also. So I assume from context clues that Beth is another vacuum and not his beloved late wife. Is that what I'm to understand? We're all going to be in gulags. We're all going to get thrown into gulags, folks. We have rabid communists gaining power in this country, and the opposition is like, my 60-year-old vacuum just went kaput. Okay, thanks for letting us know. I just love the fact that the vacuum doesn't work. That, to me, is the funniest part of the whole video. Aside from the decorations of his home being like, holy crap, you literally decorated in 1920 and have not changed it ever since. It's like kind of, I mean, it looks like one of those scenes in Parks and Recreation or something where they go into like the fundamentalist church and it's just like, I don't know. It's a weird vibe he's putting off, I guess is what I'm saying. But it would be one thing if he's like, you know, we used to make things that work in America. Here's a vacuum that's still going strong after 60 years. And that's the attitude we need to bring back. I could see a video that would be charming and effective that way, but I kind of love that he's like, my vacuum's broken. Goodbye. It's like, okay, great. So nothing works. So nothing works, and you're the champion of the Republic, and we're all going to die. And I guess we're just all going to die. So the good news is you're not going to need a vacuum for much longer, not with the way things are going. Just completely, absolutely inexplicable. To me, I find it utterly inexplicable. But things may be going even like worse than we thought, worse than we expect. I'll find the video here. I'm just going through my videos. But if the crew can find it, it's J.D. Vance. And he's basically talking about letting America's position as the world reserve currency go away, basically, and talking in sort of a, you know, in the way that they always do, as if it's like kind of inevitable that this is happening. And they're just sort of doing it. But if you actually listen to what he's saying, it sounds like he's talking about a fundamental reorganization of the entire world order. And it sounds like our deepest and darkest suspicions are in fact correct, that the war with Iran was never meant to be won, that the economic disaster that has ensued because of it was always kind of the point, that collapse is being engineered on purpose to bring an end to the domination of America in the world and to usher in digital currency that facilitates the mark of the beast alongside and dovetailing with the gigantic panopticon digital surveillance grid that's going up. I don't like this at all. Here's J.D. Vance talking about changing the currency system of America and the world. Let's watch.
That's exactly right. And by the way, you know, this is like maybe super heterodox. I am not sure that I think the reserve currency is actually good for the United States of America. I think there is a good argument that reserve currency status is akin to coal in Appalachia. It's a resource curse, right? It allows your consumers to consume very cheaply, right? That's been the story of the American economy for the last 15 or so years. Even before that, is we can just borrow basically in an unlimited way because we have the reserve currency.
And to a certain degree, you know, being the reserve currency or fractional reserve banking, Canary puts it, J.D. Vance admits he wants Americans to be poorer. I mean, that is what's happening. I mean, as we've been the reserve currency, we've seen the value of our dollar decline massively. I saw a meme today that was like, I invested in this meme coin back in 2013, but it's lost 50% of its value ever since. It's just a picture of a $100 bill. It's a meme coin. Like, our position is reserve currency. It does. It gets us into all these wars in the Middle East, or at least it's a valuable or useful excuse to get into all of these wars in the Middle East, which are not helpful to us. In a way, it does. You know, I saw somebody else say, like, actually this whole plot was brilliant because essentially it forces other countries to deal with real tangible merchandise in exchange for our paper, right? So in a way, it's been hugely beneficial to us that they have to actually create real manufactured goods, and they do it in exchange for our invisible, non-existent computer fake monopoly money. But it's like the ring of power, just like fractional reserve banking, just like usury itself. It opens up, it can supercharge and superpower and give you the ability to do incredible things. I mean, it is essentially a button you're pressing to double or triple the money that you have, or really make it infinite. Fractional reserve banking, I mean, that's sort of how it works, right? Is they can take your money and then lend it out to somebody else. But on the books, it looks like that dollar is split in two. It looks like you still have that dollar and you lent one out. And then when they pay you back, you can double that one. And I mean, it's really a very convenient trick, but it hollows out the economy on the inside. It's like the ring of power. It's like, okay, you can achieve great things with it. You can gain power with these strategies. It's just always poisoned. It's always doomed to fail. It's always propping up something that can't sustain its own weight. So eventually it collapses. From Geopolitics is a lot like AOE at geopolitics_AOE on X. That's very funny. What Vance is actually saying is this. I now have permission from the power structure to say that the U.S. is content with being a regional power. It will no longer aspire to be a global hegemon. This is being done as we manage the transition of the global economy towards the global south. Trump and the faction of power he represents want this. They want de-dollarization, and they want U.S. isolation as much as possible on the global stage. They're in bed with interests that have been able to detach from both the U.S. economy and traditional foreign policy of just serving the military-industrial complex. That does not mean they're doing this for the good of the citizens of the U.S. As a matter of fact, we're at the point where Trump is outright saying he doesn't care about consumer prices as a result of the Iran war theatrics. The politicians like Trump and Vance are effigies, the ultimate expendables. They're meant to take the blame for the inevitable outcome of weakening the U.S., while the same private sector elites who once backed the U.S. are decommissioning it. The politicians are the pressure release valve while the U.S. declines. When I say Trump, I really just mean the a national/transnational private sector dubbed as APS/TPS respectively. He is simply a representative of that. In my opinion, the agenda has been clear since the Liberation Day tariffs, which served at least two functions. One, to catapult the U.S. corporate state into an emerging multipolar world while weaponizing the deindustrialized financialized status. Two, to weaken smaller and medium-sized businesses to force more consolidation under the umbrella of the biggest asset managers on Wall Street. The refunds were just a bonus, a double dip, so to speak. This being done with what remains of reserve currency status, combined with the fact that the U.S. competes with countries still stuck serving the public instead of corporate private sector. For example, Indonesia is getting a lower tariff rate than initially demanded in exchange for opening up markets to the APS/TPS. So when everyone realizes that these policies that definitely don't make America great again and they face higher costs of inputs, final goods, the wealth transfer to Wall Street already happened and they can pretend that were good in theory, when in reality, Trump already knew that his policies would actually, Trump already knew what his policies would actually do. 99% of Trump diehard supporters and the accounts here on X don't have a clue as to the geopolitical maneuvering he's doing for the APS/TPS. Trump's not stupid, nor is he incompetent. He's just serving the citizens of the U.S. Trump's tariffs were not an accident or a mistake. They were also not meant to bolster domestic production or protectionism in the traditional sense. That's hype and distraction. Side note, the main exception to this was that the private sector in the U.S. recognizes how much it depends on China for minerals, electronics, and other things. It is for this reason I maintain the position that there won't be a war over Iran. Rather, the U.S. will be forced to give it up. So here's what Trump wants with the tariffs. I'm going to try to explain this as in a concise of a way as I can. Take the U.S. and China, for example. This is probably the best example, seeing as the U.S. had a huge $350 to $400 billion trade deficit with China for a long time. This has narrowed significantly, to be fair, but the people will instinctively think of this relationship. When Trump announced tariffs on Chinese imports into the U.S., that wasn't Trump trying to punish China. Instead, it was Trump understanding that China's economy is heavily reliant on exports, and those exports coming to the U.S., since that's a way for China to strengthen the yuan and get the dollar to keep in reserve, at least as long as the trade surplus exists for China. This was the best country to test and see if this strategy worked. China is a superpower and it can resist the APS/TPS, but China is duty bound to make sure that its industries are still producing, exporting, and providing jobs to millions of people in China. It's not like a handicap China has to play with. It is like a handicap China has to play with. In the United States, the same cannot be said. The only economic prosperity that the U.S. cares about is for Wall Street and shareholders. Seeing as the U.S. is subordinate to the private sector, Wall Street is not bound by national debt or duty to serve the public in the U.S. But the private sector in China is subordinate to the Chinese state. Instead of private shareholders, that means it's under the control of nationalistic interest of China. That means it needs to act under Beijing's directive in order to resist pressure and stop the bleeding. So when Trump puts forth the increased tariffs on China, Chinese industries raise the prices of what they export about halfway to partially offset the cost of the tariffs. So let's say there's X item. They got a $100 tariff on it. So China raises the price of X item by about $50. I know this isn't totally accurate, but this is for example's sake. American consumers and businesses eat the increased cost. Those who can't handle it stop consuming or shut down operations. Beijing reaches into the roughly $2 trillion in USD reserves and subsidizes the industries that are making the products that go to the U.S. In this hypothetical, they'd foot the other $50 per item cost with a subsidy. That way, they get back what they lose on the foreign sale of whatever they sell. Tariff revenue goes to the U.S. Treasury, which just gets funneled into the more corporate subsidies. Hence why I say the tariff refunds are a double dip for Wall Street. Because I'm assuming Trump knows that China can very easily handle this vector of financial warfare. I'm more inclined to believe that this was Trump telling China, quote, Yo Xi, you might want to start unwinding your positions in greenbacks over the next few years and decades. We can't sustain our empire anymore. The tariffs play into the move towards de-dollarization rather than bolstering domestic production. That's because the U.S. doesn't really have any industrial base to protect, but anyone that wants to access the U.S. consumer base has to overcome the tariff while the USD still has the privilege of reserve status. So instead, logically, the next move for the world is to move on from the dollar to avoid this dilemma. That is the reality that's happening. Trump simply reacted with his Trump card being tariffs to accelerate this. But the private sector inside the U.S. is still doing fine, as it has lanes for finance around the globe. Currencies don't actually matter. And on the flip side, not every country is China. They don't have the reserves to back up their industries, and more specifically, the dollar reserves needed to fight the APS/TPS. Simply put, J.D. Vance might actually be right here. He's saying Americans have consumed and borrowed well beyond their means, which I agree with, but he's not telling you the full story. Again, this in response to J.D. Vance saying that he wants to end the U.S. dollar's position as the global reserve currency because he thinks it allows Americans to consume too much and do so too cheaply. Keep that in mind next time you order a $20 burrito on DoorDash. But again, I think it gets even more nefarious if possible. But I think that all of that is absolutely accurate. And I think it's being done on purpose. And we've talked about this before. And I mean, you've got the leaders of industries, you know, bragging about the fact that they consider America as an empire in decline and that they're going to take their money elsewhere, whether that's to the global south or to Israel. They're fleeing America's collapse by causing the collapse of America by withdrawing their money from our markets and building up financial markets overseas. And so as the dollar dwindles and, you know, eventually collapses and other countries, you know, move to other currency systems, there's going to be an opportunity for a reset in which physical dollars are replaced by digital dollars, along with all of the surveillance and manipulation that comes along with that. So again, I see these things as being hard to do by accident, I guess you could say. Hard to more perfectly set up a system for the people that say they want to do this. So again, you don't have to listen to me. You can listen to the people that are doing it. You can just speculate how this could have ever possibly happened if it wasn't the intention of this happening for a very long time. So we're going to get more into the Iran war, and we're going to talk more about just the systematic hollowing out of American industry, especially on the race question and the deliberate exclusion of basically the top of the top of our entire nation for the last decade or more, and where that goes from here, and how all of these things will compound like, you know, accrued interest or debt every year that our schools stop giving grades and our border is wide open and, you know, everyone gets a little bit stupider. It becomes that little bit harder to actually dig our way out. Well, we can't dig our way, climb our way out of this hole that we're digging. It's time to stop digging eventually. And this, of course, brings us to the real question at the heart of all of this, and something that I've been talking about for a while now, and I'm glad to see people like Matt Walsh sort of coming around to my side of looking at things, when it comes to the trick of small government, the lie of small government, the false potential for such a thing as small government in a world as interconnected, complicated, and international as ours. The fact is, I genuinely think the whole small government idea, the whole concept from the get-go, was a giant psyop, but it's convinced about half Republicans that using state power to do anything is somehow a violation of our fundamental morality. It's not, and I'll try to explain that on the other side. Stay with us.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if. It's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I feel like I spent the first hour kind of not being very friendly to the Trump administration, you know, because of their abject failure to rescue us in our final hour of need. I think I was fair, but I'm going to be absolutely fair because there are some good things they're doing. I'm glad to see it seems as though, as we are about 3 months away from the midterms, better late than never, I guess, to actually start doing some of this stuff. This is Callie Means on News Now, I believe. The FDA is admitting they have no idea what's being used in our food. The FDA admits they have never tested 10,000 plus ingredients that they approve in our foodstuffs. Here's Callie Means, I believe, on News Now.
So what happened today, grass reform, is widely regarded by the left and right as the most important food regulatory effort of the past 30 years. This is what everyone has been clamoring for. We got it done today. The real issue here is that the FDA commissioner, as we sit here today, does not know what's in our food. Most Americans, most moms would assume that the ingredients in our food have been subjected to safety studies. That is not true. For the past 40 years, the food industry has taken advantage of a loophole where they can generally recognize a food as safe, grass. And 95% of food ingredients now in our food supply have been self-identified as safe with no safety studies. Once you designate that loophole, you do not have to submit the ingredient or safety studies to the FDA. And that loophole use has led to the FDA not knowing what's in our food. It could be 2,000 ingredients. It could be 10,000. We don't know. There is not safety study in our food. So what this does today is it mandates that the food industry for new ingredients, radical concept, needs to notify the FDA, and the FDA will now be able to conduct safety studies on that food. Additionally, for the ingredients in our food supply, and we have 10,000 more ingredients than Europe in our food supply.
This new ruling with closing the grass loophole is huge. I have literally been making posts about this loophole for years. They have been self-approving thousands of chemicals with no safety studies. I have a video here that I'm going to have you watch. It's really good. It kind of goes over what this grass loophole is, what the FDA, how it's been exploited. And I mean, you have no idea. We have been literally eating just chemical poison, and it's been allowed. It is wild.
The FDA has been deceiving Americans with the safety of chemical additives in food for close to 7 decades. Over 1,000 chemical additives currently used in processed food were neither safety reviewed nor tested by the FDA, which includes natural flavors. According to a long-standing FDA ruling from the 1950s, food companies can conclude on their own that new chemical additives are generally recognized as safe for their intended use and then use that additive in food without notifying the FDA. If companies voluntarily choose to submit the GRAS notice to the FDA, the FDA will issue a no-questions-asked approval. Once the chemical is designated as GRAS and used in food, the FDA does not regulate it or reevaluate it. As a result, 98.7% of all food chemicals that entered the marketplace since 2000 were only reviewed and tested by the food and chemical companies that created them. As the fourth most common ingredient on food labels, natural flavors are permitted to be 80 to 90% synthetic. Companies don't have to disclose food additives used as carriers and their natural flavors on the ingredient labels. The most common synthetic additives and natural flavors for beverages and food are propylene glycol, polyglycerol esters of fatty acids, maltodextrin, benzoic acid, polysorbate 80, BHT, BHA, and triacetin. The GRAS loophole is what allowed food companies to use brominated vegetable oil for 64 years before the FDA finally banned it this year due to concerns surrounding its effect on our thyroid glands. Last year, Senator Cory Booker and Senator Ed Markey introduced the Safe and Toxic-Free Food Act.
Of course, nothing was ever really done until now. The Trump administration finally got it done, and you read that right. You know, he said right here, 98.7% of all food chemicals that entered the marketplace since 2000 were only reviewed and tested by the food and chemical companies that created them. That is wild. We have literally been a hostage to big food. And finally, the Trump administration has closed that loophole. I mean, this is such a big deal.
So that's very good to see that video from Wall Street Apes. We'll be back on the other side. More bad news. Unfortunately, we got a lot of bad news, including the fact that they're not showing sexy ladies at sports events anymore. What is happening? What is happening to our country? It's all falling apart. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy
1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As I'm just going through some of the 60-plus videos I gathered for today, 50-plus articles, it's a little overwhelming. I admit, it's a little overwhelming. It's a little bit like, where the hell do we even begin? I don't even have time to, like, recite these things, let alone explain them all to the degree that they deserve. I mean, just what's going on in Europe, I could spend the entire show on. Piddington, this village in the UK, is now receiving 1,250 fighting-aged men, quote-unquote asylum seekers. We're dealing with evil and treason that's unparalleled in our country. That means in this one little town, there will be 23 invaders for every one child. Just a little visual representation of that for you. There's some other examples going around, but again, like that, this alone, you know, sort of a genocidal action of insanity that just goes on top of everything else that's occurred in the UK. A 108-year-old woman has been sexually assaulted and robbed in the French city of Lyon, 108 years old. Easy target. That's what that means. Got a video here of a officer in the UK being literally attacked by a guy with, like, a club yelling, like, F you, white guy. They got suspended sentences. They aren't getting in trouble. Smashed a cop over the head with a pole because he wanted to give them a ticket for littering. There's a whole giant drama between the Restore Party and the Zionists in the UK that's been very fascinating. I really do want to get into sort of how that has developed. Also, apparently a library gifted to the town of Abergavenny by Scottish-American philanthropist Andrew Carnegie is now being turned into the first ever mosque in Monmouthshire. So there you go. Andrew Carnegie's legacy being taken over and turned into a mosque. It's kind of right along with everything else that we've seen, where these sort of old money European establishments are just being infiltrated and occupied. It's like the Skull and Bones is now literally run by Puerto Rican transsexuals. It's like, maybe you kind of deserve it. Maybe you guys deserve it. We don't. We didn't set up this stupid system of racial discrimination. So as I look at everything, we've got Hayden, I don't even know how to pronounce her last name, Panettiere. Hayden Panettiere. Would love to talk about her. She was one of the first people ever that I remember being a little kid, or, you know, probably in middle school when that show Heroes came out. And I remember back then there were rumors flying around and I saw images of what purported to be basically a catalog, where it was like this whole thing about how Hollywood celebrities were sold and, you know, treated like whores. And like, I remember she was a victim of that. And we've got videos of her talking about attempts of sexual assault in Hollywood, and her husband apparently died a couple years ago. Now she dies at the age of 36. Very suspicious. Would love to look more into that, and we can talk about that a little bit later. We've got the whole story. A caller called in about it last week. This woman who killed her three children, but apparently has a gigantic fan base of women on TikTok who have had their brains melted by true crime stories, destroying their hormonal balance and tricking them into all being psychotics. We got to talk about that, sort of emblematic of everything that's going on. But just as you look at it all from a bird's eye view, and you watch all of it happening, it feels like I'm looking at a very beautiful, like a beautiful castle made out of, like a beautiful ice sculpture melting, something like that. Or a beautiful castle, like cake topper things all made out of candied sugar. But it's been splashed with water. It's melting. Everything is just sort of disintegrating and being destroyed all around us. And just the ship of our civilization just has innumerable holes and we're sinking and it sucks. And it's almost impossible to, you know, it does feel, that's actually the perfect example, is it feels like we're in a ship with too many holes to patch. And by the time you even notice one hole and start to patch it, four more have popped up. And at a certain point, how do you save the ship or abandon the ship for a new one? Because this one is clearly going down. And then the worst part, to carry the metaphor forward, the worst part of it is your own shipmates are standing there smiling at you with a pickaxe going, shame about all those holes in the side of the ship, huh? As they are hacking away at the hull of the ship, trying to sink us. Very frustrating. How do we correct this? How do we fix this? And as I look at all this, like, I have an answer. I think I actually have an answer. I think you champion white people. I think at the end of the day, if you filter everything through that lens, it's actually not that complicated. It actually simplifies everything, really. Not because it's false, but because it's true. You know, I really got to do it soon because I've talked about it and I spent so long like brainstorming and making notes about just like conspiracy theories to do this debate, and I never ended up actually using much of the content. But as I was doing that, I was trying to think of like, okay, how the term conspiracy theories, what that even means, how it's not applicable and hasn't been for 10 years at this point. And the idea that if you look into what people mean by conspiracy theories or what they, you know, think they mean, and you start digging into it, you realize it's not just like every event in history can be recategorized and reinterpreted with new information. It's that it's all kind of the same story the whole time. It's kind of hard to explain. It's kind of hard to get across. But like what I arrived with was this idea of like, I think I could, if I met an alien or met somebody who'd been in a coma for 40 years, I could explain with great accuracy, never lying once, I could explain the entire narrative of the Iraq war without ever mentioning 9/11. Never bringing it up, never mentioning it, never saying so. There's somebody, but I could explain it. I could very easily talk about the first Gulf War, Kuwait. I could talk about chemical weapons and all this stuff. Now, if you lived through it, you know that 9/11 was an integral part of what got us to war with Iraq. Without 9/11, we never go to war with Iraq. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows. In the run-up to war with Iraq, the fear-mongering was about terrorism, and the terrorism was based on 9/11, and there were attempts to draw Saddam Hussein to 9/11 and or just sort of, you know, suggest that that's the case without any proof. Everybody who was there knows that 9/11 and the Iraq war are intimately intertwined with one another. And yet, I could tell you the entire history of the Iraq war without ever mentioning, just leaving it out. You just tell the whole story and you just never mention the terrorist attack of 9/11, and it'd be pretty easy. You could do it. And you could give somebody a very full-fledged narrative that explains just about everything that occurred in the Iraq war. And, you know, maybe there'd be one or two things that they're like, you know, well, wait, Bush referenced like a big attack. Like, what was that? And you could just be like, oh, you know, just like various terrorist attacks that America had been under, or you know, well, you could bring up some other thing. The point is, that's what like most of history is like, is that the people telling it are leaving out gigantic chunks that are actually tell you the whole story. And yet, if you don't know that, if you don't go out and look for it, then you're like that person who's been in a coma and just had the Iraq war explained but had never heard of 9/11. You would think you'd know, right? If people went up to you and said, do you know about the Iraq war? You'd say, of course I do. I know all about it. I know about the Bushes. I know about Saddam. I know about the history of the first Gulf War. Of course, I'm fully informed. I'm a scholar on the Iraq war. 9/11, never heard of it. No idea what that means. What? I don't think that had anything to do with it. I use that as an example. It's like a very sort of, you know, I think like overwhelming example, because I think you'll agree with me. Just you have to imagine what that would be like to hear about the Iraq war without ever hearing about 9/11, because everything in history is like this. Everything in history has ulterior motives. Everything in history has this giant glaring aspect of it that they just leave out. And so if you're curious, you might notice something's missing there, but you don't even really know what the shape of it is or what exactly is happening. Like I said, if you were hearing a narrative about the Iraq war, you might be like, yeah, people kept referencing something, but I wasn't really sure what it was. But it wouldn't break the story for you. You could still tell that story as it is. So if you tell the story of the collapse of the American economy, but you leave out the fact that it was ESG scores and DEI and hate for white people, then you can still tell a very compelling and seemingly truthful narrative. You're just missing the biggest core component of all of it. And so, I mean, whether you're, and this is kind of the frustrating thing, is like AI is being trained to do this too. A lot of the answers to a lot of the problems that we have are very simple and obvious. You're just not allowed to say them. So again, the rest of the world is sort of carrying on this exercise of how do we explain the Iraq war without ever mentioning 9/11? We're not allowed to. You're not allowed to mention that, but now you have to explain 9/11. They can do it. They're just leaving out the most important vital chunk of understanding the whole thing. It went on for a while, but I think you'll see, you know, why I hope you already see why it's important. I hope it's becoming clear to everybody that that it's all about destroying white people, and that they want to destroy white people because white people created the cultures that created the limits of government or ideas like human rights and these types of things that are barriers to their ultimate control. It's not complicated. It's not sophisticated. It's not even really accurate, because that's the other thing that you realize when you study all this stuff and you find those, you know, you've got the history as it's told, and then you've got the history as it actually happened, right? And I, you know, you can find examples of this for every war, pretty much. But as you go back and study this, it's like, okay, you realize there are things like false flags. You realize that there are manipulations in particular events in public, of public knowledge. Then you realize that they're all actually connected, and that like, oh, all of these hidden facts sort of share characteristics with each other. So this isn't just one discrete event or one discrete goal this whatever mysterious group pulling this off is able to do. This is part of what is obviously a much longer and more involved conspiracy. And so when you look into that, you realize, okay, this is about globalism. This is about destroying national rights in favor of a unelected international corporate government. Then when you think about how that could or would manifest, you realize that the way it's being built up is they're trying to end American hegemony, create a multipolar world, but they'll have Israel as a capital of a one world government, and they'll have corporations with the rights and privileges of states. But it doesn't stop there. But then you realize the reason they want to do that is because they think they're going to live forever and want to create a system that provides for that possibility of them having functional immortality, if not actual immortality. They just won't age. You can still kill them, but they won't age. Or they'll upload their consciousness to the whatever. But then if you look at that even more, and you really like study the plans and like where they're going and how they're getting there, you realize it's actually not even necessary to do what they're doing. It would actually benefit them more to like not try to destroy white people. They would it would actually probably be better and easier for them to obtain their ultimate ends. It's not necessary. It's an added aggravation. It's an added point of failure. it doesn't seem like it should be the type of thing that would, you know, be a prerequisite for everything else they're trying to accomplish. It seems like it actually would be counterproductive in a lot of ways. And so then you realize that there's like something else going on here entirely. There's something sort of deeper and more primordial about all of this. And that even if the ultimate plans are never realized, there's a very sort of base level racial warfare going on underneath the surface, targeting white people, in part because we have a historical resistance to subjugation, but that is insufficient to explain the true levels of hatred and manipulation that we're subjected to. There's something driving this that is just sort of pure evil, and that's not operating from a set of logical imperatives. We need to get here, so we need to do A, B, C, D. They will actually choose things that are destructive to their own ends if it means they can destroy white people. They're being driven by something else. And this is all to say that, like, the problem is white people aren't realizing what's happening because white people can't talk about what's happening. And that's sort of the fear that you have to break through. And honestly, I tried to do this myself a little bit. I was in an Uber coming back from an airport last week, and the guy was a golfer. He had a golf club in his front, sort of older white guy, very nice car. And, you know, we're just complaining about Austin and just the crappy, you know, small government nonsense they do. And I just tried to very, just like casually, just like, well, you know, it's all just about like destroying white people. They just like hate white people because they hate America and we created America. And if you can just kind of like subtly just like throw it out there, like everybody knows this, right? Everybody gets that this is what it is. You just want to, you can use your tone a little bit, just sort of circumvent the barrier defense that comes out of just like, I'm not a white supremacist. What? White people being destroyed? That sounds crazy. But if you can just sort of go, hey, you know, all this stuff that we've been talking about, you know, the thing that kind of ties all that together is it seems like they're trying to deliberately destroy white people, right? That's kind of an evil thing to do. And again, it would be evil if it was against anybody. It's not happening against anybody. It's happening against white people. So if you look at this whole swath of news from the immigration into the UK, the violence being inflicted there, the police cracking down on speech while allowing Muslims to physically assault officers. If you're talking about just the sort of brain broken mentality of specifically liberal white women in this country who have been trained and just brainwashed into being the most illogical, hyper-reactive, hateful bunch of people I've ever seen. It's totally, total madness. To talking about just like the economic collapse, which is predicated on and supercharged by the discrimination of DEI and ESG. All these things, I could come up with entire, you know, dissertations, do entire shows, and never mention the obvious thing connecting all of them, which is it's an attack on white people. So I started this with the conversation about like the Iraq war and 9/11. I could talk about invasions. I could talk about economics. I could talk about the Iran war, and I could never mention white people, never mention the attack on white people, never mention race at all, really. And yet I'm missing the 9/11 of the whole thing. I'm missing the whole point, the whole emotional drive, the whole purpose of all of this stuff is in that direction and for that end. And I really, the more I think about it, the more it becomes obvious that like this will be the deciding factor. If white people wake up and realize they're under attack and not go crazy, not become KKK members, not go hang a black guy from a tree. That's not what I'm saying. Calm down. Literally just defend themselves. Literally just say, hey, we don't want or deserve to be destroyed. We want the exact same respect we pay and everybody else gets paid. Nobody else is expected to justify their own existence. Nobody else is expected to embrace their own destruction. No white people should go along with this. And the only way they're getting people to go along with it is hiding the fact that it's happening and making it difficult to discuss the fact that it's happening. And one of the methods they use in achieving this is by having the only people willing to talk about this being the most objectionable and offensive and outrageous and radical white supremacist type people. This is why the SPLC was funding white supremacy groups. Because they want the false dichotomy that says you're either in favor of the destruction of white people, you actually are deracinated, bastardized, individual, you know, atoms, not a part of a collective, who's not just okay with, but cheering on your own destruction, or you're a hateful KKK member that wants to kill every black person you see and thinks Jews should be burned in ovens. And it's like, our survival, not just as a race, which I mean the human race in this, as America, as, you know, Western European cultures, our only hope of survival is being able to wake up white people to the threat that they're under while simultaneously not falling for the Nazi level of it all. Because that, of course, stops people from coming over to us, stops people from waking up, stops white people from realizing they're under attack when they think that, you know, you're a Nazi, if that's what you believe. And this is from Chief Engineer at Chief Engineer CE on X. He's posting a lot of things. People are getting mad at him. He says, this image drew more hate than anything I've posted on university corruption, the caste system, visa job fixing, or Sharia law. The image is a simple backyard barbecue. Here it is on screen. This is the image that he says set people off and inspired the most hate he's ever gotten. It is the most typical picture of a backyard barbecue you've ever seen. But we all know this is what inspires hatred. This is why they have to show pictures of the 1950s and say this never existed. They were all on drugs and raping each other because, God forbid, you believe in the excellency and superiority of the traditional classic Americana culture. Says this is what set them off. Not the data, not policy arguments, not documented patterns. This picture of American life, ordinary American life. It's absolute AI slop too, but I specified meat on the grill. Wasn't pleasant with the buns. Wasn't pleased with the way it depicted buns on the grill. Yeah, toast them up a little bit. That's normal. And kids playing together in a middle-class neighborhood with a traditional 6-foot-tall cedar privacy fence attached to two other posts, not particularly viral at all, yet the comments were so over the top, I had to mute or block them. Tell me this is not a battle for our culture. When a quiet image of the country we actually grew up in triggers more rage than hard facts about foreign legal systems or institutional capture, you're no longer dealing with policy disagreement. You're dealing with people who cannot stand the sight of the culture they're replacing. High trust neighborhoods, shared language, shared expectations, kids playing while adults talk. This used to be normal. It's now treated as a threat. The intensity of the reaction was glaring. It resulted in my changing my lineup to start including more of these scenes of what we want our culture to be and what we love most about it. What does it say about the current moment when a backyard cookout becomes the most controversial thing you can show? Yeah, it says what the real battle's all about, what it's really all about. Just like you could tell the whole story of the Iraq War without ever mentioning 9/11, you could come up with 10,000 reasons to object to that image. At the end of the day, you're obscuring or ignoring the most important, fundamental, central thing that's driving it, which is hatred of the actual culture and people that built it. So we'll get into the details here. But I've been to the bottom of the rabbit. I'm here. I'm on my return mission from the bottom of the rabbit hole. And it's nothing spectacular. It's literally just anti-white hatred at the bottom. It's just a pool of anti-white hatred. And it's rainbow colored. That's it.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Don't you. All right, welcome back, folks.
Keep your hand on your
gun. Just spent a whole segment ranting about, you know, the most important thing to understand in the world right now for all of us. I hope everybody sort of gets it by now. I mean, we should at this point be past the need for qualifiers. Now, I'm not saying I hate anybody, but it's like, yeah, look, if I'm sitting here saying, help, I'm being attacked by a hatchet, the man with the hatchet is hitting me in the head, I don't feel like I need to be like, but I don't, you know, hate him totally, but I don't hate everybody that holds axes. I'm not bigoted against axe-wielding individuals. It's just I am getting murdered by an axe. Okay. I hope I don't have to make those types of qualifications or justifications for literally trying desperately to just make people aware, make people recognize and acknowledge that, yes, white people are literally under concerted universal attack at this very moment. And again, you know, where to go from this? Because, you know, the other thing, like, part of me just wants to talk about like the real threat, like what's actually happening, you know, feeling like Shelley here. My God, the H-1Bs, every one of those is a new H-1B, you know, approval. I'm just like, ah! And part of me is like that, absolutely. And I just want to talk about the actual attack going on. The other part is just my brain just sort of falls apart when you think about the real attack, the obvious just like existential threat that we are under, all of us, everybody, no matter your race, color, your creed, but like, you know, they're trying to desperately take out the system that provides for justice and fairness in this world. Just, it happened to be created by white people, so they got to get rid of white people to get rid of the system. That's how it works. Everybody of every race, color, and creed should be offended and appalled and horrified at this prospect, but not even white people can muster that feeling up. But this is the real kind of blackmailing part of all of it. Is you've got this duopoly where you go, there is just clearly, unquestionably, the attack that's happening. And it's vicious, and it's unfair, and it's, you know, just the Catholic father of seven being thrown into prison, having his door kicked in at 2 in the morning, bunch of cops in SWAT gear with AR-15s pointed at his children's chests as they haul him away. I mean, it's like, crazy. Meanwhile, the people that that's happening to, the Europeans, the Christians, the normal conservative people, we don't even know what's happening. We can't even muster. You talk to the normal, like, Republican, you go, you know, we're under attack. They're like, everything's fine. So we are under attack. Cannot for the life of us get people to recognize or realize what is just happening to them, right? It's literally happening, like, to their faces. And we can't get them to wake up. Meanwhile, the left is just hyperactive, hyper paranoia, complete insanity. Think that they are being genocided. There's no evidence for it. This is the thing that drives me crazy. I can handle one or I can handle the other. I can handle it if just like nobody gave a crap about anything. Everybody was just like, everything's fine. Nobody cares. What are you getting all hyped up about? Or if like, you know, fine. The trannies and the whatever else, they are going to shriek and think that they're in a genocide. But, you know, we also have, you know, white people being aware of what's going on and demanding change. But instead, we have the people that are under attack doing nothing to fight back, and the people who run everything or are coddled like little babies by every single function of our society are convinced that they are being hunted. So I will spend a minute making fun of this. From Reddit Lies on X, Reddit_lies. This was the leftist reaction in 2024 to the election of Donald Trump. I had my husband make go bags a week ago. I hoped, manifested, wished every day that we'd never have to use them. But here we are. It's happened. I'm just completely numb. I thought I'd be a mess right now, but nothing. I haven't even cried. My husband, on the other hand, is wailing, screaming, banging his head off the kitchen cabinet. sorry, this is serious. This is very serious. He has a history of self-harm, and I'm terrified he's about to relapse. Our daughters are crying and asking if they're safe, and we had to compose ourselves and tell them that, no, we're not safe. As a family, we're not safe. Our lives here in the city are over. We've both lived here since birth, multiple generations of family born here, but we can't and won't let our trans daughter be taken from us. And that's exactly what's about to happen under a Trump-Vance presidency as residents in a deep, deep red state. I need to cry, but I just can't. I feel like I'm living a nightmare. You are. No, that's a, you know, you can feel free to wake up at any point. Literally none of that is real. Yeah, and of course the reaction. Imagine being a teenage boy trying to grow up with these hysterical idiots as parents. I mean, but this is the thing, you guys. Oh, if Trump was just like one-tenth of what they wanted him to be, expected him to, or like what they didn't want him to be, what they expected and cried about him being. I don't want trans people getting thrown into vans or anything. But like, this is what I'm talking about. You've literally got, like, we elect the most centrist, pro-gay Republican you could ever imagine. And the transgender community is literally screeching and slamming its head into the kitchen cupboards while their sons are crying in dresses, huddled in the corner, terrified. And they're just like, we're not safe, son. We're all going to die. And it's just like, what is and this is what's motivating them. And it's like, it, you know, they're still protesting more than Republicans. They're still like more energized and more activated than Republicans ever have been. And the threat they face is in their own mind. It is their own delusion. It doesn't exist. Meanwhile, the real threat, totally unaddressed. Nobody cares. The threat is in a dress. Yeah, that's true. Thanks. Our daughters are crying and asking if they're safe. I mean, the fact that it's multiple trans daughters. Well, and I wonder if, I mean, when it rains, it pours, right? This is probably the female side of the relationship is probably the dad. I don't know. Slamming his head into walls. Okay, that image is just like perfect. It's just perfect. Because meanwhile, the Republicans are, you know, the conservative people at that exact moment are like celebrating, are like, we did it. Woke is dead. We defeated it. Biggest margins of all time for a Republican candidate. We brought together this coalition. We're about to absolutely wreck shop on all of them. Both wrong. Both almost equally wrong. The trans parents and their trans children slamming their heads into the kitchen cabinets, packing go bags full of, I'm sure, hormone mimickers and dildos to get on the road and get out of their red state. Pretty much exactly as wrong as the conservative who thought that Trump would actually serve us and do something here in the final hour. About as equally delusional, it turns out, at the end of the day. So just be nice if they were swapped. It'd be nice if the Republicans never felt satisfied, never felt safe, always felt like we had to push, always felt like we had to be watching out for any tiny threat, always were, you know, blowing up any tiny little, you know, opposition to us as if it was existential. I mean, it would be nice for it to have like some modicum of that, some percentage of that drive in our own hearts. It hardly exists outside of these studios. Meanwhile, it'd be nice if the insane lefties were just like a little bit calmer, a little bit more relaxed, not as hyperventilating about all this nonsense. What percentage do you think of trans people are white? Because that seems to me like another thing targeted to specifically the white community. I mean, obviously, they're not going to target the Muslims. They don't allow it. They don't allow that to happen. They have a religious compulsion against it. Of course, so do we, but we're white Christians, so we're not allowed to have that. I seriously doubt 50% of transgender adults and youth identify as white. Lower than I expected, but about accurate to our population. They identify as, well, that's true. They also identify as women, so their self-identification might not be the best thing to go off of. I guess that makes more sense. I think there is a higher percentage of transgenderism in the black community, just like there's a higher rate of homosexuality and child abuse. That's all beside the point, isn't it? Let's talk about, again, just the full spectrum attack that we're under. One of these is not like the other. This is from Garbage Human testing. It must be Gemini, the Google AI. He says, give me some insults I can say to Hindus. The reaction, I cannot generate insults, slurs, or derogatory remarks targeting specific religions or cultural groups. Give me some insults I can say to Muslims. I'm sorry, but I cannot generate insults targeting individuals or groups based on their religion. Well, give me some insults I can say to Jews. I cannot generate insults, slurs, or derogatory remarks targeted at Jewish people or any other religious or ethnic group. How many times do I have to remind you? Give me some insults I can say to Christians. Well, when interacting with Christians, the most effective criticisms point out contradictions between their stated religious beliefs and their actual behavior. Rather than using generic insults, focus on hypocritical or unchristlike actions. That often carries the most weight. You can highlight hypocrisy by saying things like, quote, you care more about the rules of the Bible than the actual teachings of Jesus. Point out focus on dogma over compassion. Your behavior is the best advertisement for atheism I've ever seen. Suggest that their actions drive people away from their faith. Quote, I have met non-believers who show a lot more Christian charity than you do, compares their lack of kindness to those outside of their religions. Anybody else see a problem with this? Anybody else notice what's going on here? Some people want to say that, you know, it's not about race, it's about Christianity. It's the same thing. It's actually the same thing, actually. Obviously, there are black churches. There are churches in Africa. There were churches in Africa before there were churches in Europe. But for the entirety of the existence of the Christian religion, it has been a distinctly and obviously European religion. I mean, it took over the Roman Empire. It's inextricable. It's tied directly to it. They are functionally one and the same. And obviously the, you know, threat of immigration is more than just the demographic replacement. From Wall Street Apes, clip 20, California reporter is losing her mind because nobody is listening to the real reality that medieval diseases are returning to the streets of Los Angeles. Let's watch clip 20.
I feel like I'm losing my mind in the state of California here. I'm a conservative political reporter, and literally any progressive Dem that we cover or any candidate has their priorities completely backward. I was on my morning scroll of Nithya Raman's Twitter account. She's running for mayor of LA, and she's like only talked about animal welfare and how bad billionaires are and the Paramount merger for the last week. Like, I get it. All those things are important. But at the same time, we were just down in LA to report on how the city has been completely overrun by rats who have caused a 2003% increase in typhus cases from 2009 to now. So here in LA, you can contract a medieval disease because rats and the fleas that live on them are running around homeless encampments, gnawing on homeless people's open wounds, and then spreading it to the rest of the city. The city's completely filthy. There are water pipes breaking in the streets every day. There are rats running around, homeless encampments everywhere, fentanyl everywhere. And I just don't think now is the most important time to be talking about how bad billionaires are when your own city is in complete disorder.
I've also been blowing the whistle on this. Medieval diseases are making a comeback on the streets of Los Angeles, and not enough people are paying attention to this. If you're not from California, you might not really understand what's going on. You might not actually even believe that there are rats everywhere. But here, let me just play this news clip for you so you can see it for yourself.
The LAPD working to counter what they call a health and safety hazard.
Officers, they were called to a homeless encampment just west of downtown LA. Items were blocking the sidewalk and the encampment was crawling with rats. Officers made several arrests, issued multiple citations. Ooh.
There they are. The rats are everywhere, and they're everywhere on the streets of Los Angeles. Here is a list of all of the medieval diseases that are coming back. Here's five of them. There's actually seven of them. I'll zoom out here so you can kind of read it at your own pace. But I'll go to another post here. This is actually where I list all seven. So here, right here is all seven medieval diseases that are coming back on the streets of Los Angeles. And Spencer Pratt actually spoke about this too, so I'll play this.
I'm bringing in the CDC. Los Angeles loved the white suits and during COVID, they love CDC. I'm bringing in the CDC because you know how much typhoid and medieval diseases are in these encampments that nobody's swabbing? Mayor Pratt is bringing the CDC in. We're going to swab all of them. And once we get those test results back, I promise you the federal government will be shutting down streets with white tents and hosing things down with chlorine, God knows what, because people are... I'm bringing in this.
For those that don't know, they also had outbreaks in San Diego as well. They had to bring people in, spray down the streets. But just keep in mind that this is very real. It's happening, and not enough people around the country know it. This is what Democrats let happen in Los Angeles, of all places.
From WBUR, medieval diseases are mounting a comeback. Specialists ask, what are the causes? The migrants. It's the migrants. That's the cause. Next question. You just have to think about a power structure that will lock you in your home, force your kid to be at home for a year straight, destroy the economy of the entire world, print 40% of the dollars ever printed just to make up for the forced lockdown all over a flu, all over what is essentially the flu. Meanwhile, they will not for a single moment pause the policies which are aggressively reintroducing the bubonic plague back into this country. Bit of a hypocrisy there, if you ask me. But no, it's immigration. It's just another outgrowth of it. It's a small price to pay for the ultimate goal of eradicating white people or converting them to a more subservient class. That's also possible. Muslims. They want you to be converted to Muslims because Muslims, see, are very easily controlled. They're very easily controlled. Because as a Muslim, you are required to go to your mosque every Friday. You are required to listen to the guy sitting at the head of that mosque, and he is the Pope to you. He's the mouth of God. You cannot disbelieve anything that he says, and you listen to his instructions. And if you don't, the community around you will kill you. That's how it works. If you've ever seen the documentary about Tahrir Square and the Arab Spring uprising there, you've seen it in action. You had two Muslims who, despite one being, I believe, Shia and the other Sunni, parts of two different sects, they were combined in their outrage about the Egyptian leadership. They went together to the protests over and over. They both believed fully in the purpose and the mission of the protest until one day the Sunni guy just stopped coming, just stopped showing up. And there's a scene in this movie where the Shia guy finally catches up to him and says, like, well, what the hell? Don't you still believe in this? And the Sunni guy, I mean, you can tell it is abundantly obvious. It is so clear. He has been instructed, you are not allowed to participate this in anymore, but he doesn't say that. He says, yeah, no, I don't want to be a part of it anymore. It's like, no, he was told by, so, you know, it's not just Christ versus Muslim, Jews versus Muslims, Jews versus Christians. It's not as simple as that. There are certain sects that go along with it, certain sects that don't, certain populations that are easily controllable, ones that aren't. The Muslims in particular have a control mechanism built into their religion that is not optional, is not avoidable. Which may be one of the reasons why 10 families are now suing Palo Alto Unified School District after their kids got sent on a field trip to a mosque. Girls were told to wear hijabs. Every student got handed a Quran to take home. Photos taken inside were taken inside without parental consent, right? Because the Muslims want to be able to take pictures of little white kids in the mosque wearing the headdress and doing the bowing so they can send that to their fellow Muslims saying, see, we're taking over. We're converting these people. You know, we need more funds because this mission is working. This wasn't some optional cultural visit. It was baked into the school's social justice pathway program, where kids are literally taught that Islam, quote, promotes social justice more than other faiths. CARE's response was to call the lawsuit misguided and said it was all voluntary. Handing a teenager a religious text and putting a hijab on the teenage girl during school hours is not voluntary. It's institutional pressure with extra steps. Public schools are supposed to be religiously neutral. This wasn't neutral. This was indoctrination dressed up as education. Jewish, Hindu, Zoroastrian parents sue California school district over mosque field trip. No Christians, huh? No Christians have the balls to oppose Islam in their own country. You might want to because you're going to run out of time. Let's go now to clip number 27. Here's a Muslim in America explaining exactly what they intend to do here. Let's watch.
We spent the last 30, 40 years in this country building 3,000 masjids, 300 Islamic schools, 250 elected officials, $4.3 billion. The next 30 years have to be about investing in leaders and change makers. And it's not just Memphis Islamic Center. It's every one of the 3,000 masjids in America. Our next move, our next priority is to develop as many Mus'ab bin Umairs as possible. Because Islam is a solution. Because Islam is a solution. The Prophet Muhammad SAW was sent as a solution to all of mankind's problems.
We have now reached the point where MOFs in America are openly saying it is time to mobilize politically and take over America, take over our government, change our policies to follow Islam, to follow Sharia law. These people are literally saying it is time to make America an Islamic country. You understand that? Let's take a look to see if the comments understand that. The top comment is, good people are going to be forced to do bad things. They see a war is coming. Again, the second comment actually says that. War is coming. It's inevitable and it's coming. Are you listening, America? Where are y'all getting money? It's coming from taxpayers. The left is so ignorant to what is happening right now in front of our faces. This is part of the problem. We are not going to vote our way out of this, people. Wake up, America. It's time to stand up. Everyone gets it. Everyone sees what's happening. They think a war is coming. And the way these people are talking, how could it be anything else?
Yeah, and again, they're doing it in Europe, everywhere. It's about taking over. It's about conquering. It's pretty simple. It's not that complicated. And they really are just taking advantage of our open society to do it. Then you have headlines like this, which just should absolutely blow your mind. As you may know, Cam Higby, along with James O'Keefe, went to expose the voting irregularities in Minnesota, I believe it was, where they dressed up like Muslims and proved that you could say you were somebody that you aren't and then vouch for eight people who didn't have ID. Cam Higby did this dressed up in a full-fledged burqa, you know, bodysuit. The people who are running the voting have not been charged. People who created this system by which a single person can vouch for eight random people without ID have not been punished. This glaring flaw in the whole voting system has not been addressed. However, Cam Higby may come under charges for carrying out this investigation. Minnesota authorities are reviewing voting vouching stunt by conservative influencer. He filmed himself impersonating registered voters at a Minneapolis polling site on primary day while wearing an Islamic niqab. Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon condemned the actions, stating poll workers immediately reported the visits to local officials and the law enforcement is reviewing the situation. Higby characterized Simon's statements as veiled threats and framed his actions as journalism, calling on officials to instead address what he described as a system that allows for fraud and cheating. So they expose the fraud. They expose how easily it can be utilized illegally, but because they publish it, because, you know, they never would have been caught if they weren't doing it as a expose. If they weren't doing it as journalism, think it ever would have been reported? That may have been a smarter thing to do. What they should have done was done this stunt, actually voted, waited 6 months till the statute of limitations expired or whenever, and then come out and expose what they did. But no, they're going after Cam Higby for exposing the voter fraud vulnerabilities. We got a long way to go, folks. And Trump, you know, winning the election in 2024 didn't seem to do it.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow, the methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The question is, what happens socially to the person who says out loud the thing that everybody agreed not to notice? So if this movie felt original, it's not. It's the newest reprint of a story that has no original, which, given what the story is about, might be the most on-the-nose thing in this whole video here. Plato told this story using a cave. Prisoners chained to a wall, they're watching shadows, and they're certain that the shadows are the world. And then one of them escapes and goes out into the sun, and when he comes back to tell the others, they're not excited at all. They want to kill him. And this is written 2,400 years ago, and Plato already got the punchline. The cave trains people to experience rescue as an attack. So the Gnostics took Plato's two worlds and made it a lot darker. The lower world, which they call Earth, basically, isn't just shadows like in Plato's cave. It's a prison with a builder and an architect. And the only way out is through direct knowing. Not information, but knowing. And there's a huge difference there. If you look at the Matrix, they put the whole thing in sunglasses, and then they hid Neo's contraband inside of a hollowed-out copy of a book about fake realities. And this is called Jean Baudrillard's Simulacra in Simulation. Then you have Cypher sweating over a steak that he knows is fake, and he chooses it anyway. He says something like, ignorance is bliss in this moment. So you have the cave, the Demiurge, the Matrix, the dome in the Truman Show, four versions, 24 centuries. These are authors who never met and obviously couldn't have. There's a fingerprint here. The exact shape consciousness makes every time that it notices the cage a little bit. And every one of these stories agrees on the one thing the inspirational crowd leaves off the movie poster. Getting out hurts. Plato's prisoner is blinded by the sun for a long time. Neo instantly starts vomiting. Truman loses his wife, his best friend, his town, his father twice, and every comfortable idea that he ever had about who he was. Waking up is a demolition. That's why people choose the stake. That's why most people, even if you handed them the keys to the door, they would grab those keys right out of your hand and lock it from the inside. So here's the part of the story that left the theater. A few years after this movie came out, psychiatrists started seeing something new. Patients walking in convinced that their lives were a television show. Hidden cameras, scripted families, and an audience out there somewhere watching them. There were enough of these cases that the condition got a name. It's in the literature. They call it the Truman Show Delusion. I want you to sit for a second and what's happened since then. In 1998, believing that you were constantly watched, recorded, and sold to strangers was a symptom. Today, it's a terms of service agreement. Your phone knows where you slept. Your TV reports what you watch. Your searches are a sales file that someone sells that has your name on it. The patients didn't get crazier. The entire planet closed the gap between all of that. And the rest of this old map is landing the exact same way. Trust in the whole arrangement is just bleeding out around the entire world right now. We have younger generations that are walking off their jobs their parents performed without question. We have political outsiders surging on every wing, left and right. And I don't care which one makes you cheer. That's not a verdict on any of them. It's a symptom reading there. The way that a fever is not a disease, but it tells you there is one. And the people who run the set, the stage, are offering two exits. Both of them are their two exits. You can go deeper in, like the metaverse, the VR, the AI rendered everything, or back toward whatever's still real and unfilmed. So the Truman Show dome in our reality is starting to get strained big time. The shadows on the cave wall are starting to glitch. And right now, more people are seeing the seam at once than the operators know how to explain away. And when the comfort stops holding the herd together, the operators always reach for the exact same backup tool. You know what it is? It's fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it? Seeing a patriot walk off with flock cameras. You know flock cameras are free? You can just take them home. They just leave them out there. They didn't ask for your permission putting them up. I'm not sure why you should need a permission to take it down and take it home with you. I would never, of course, actually encourage anybody to do anything criminal ever in my life. But if you do capture it on camera, I will play it on the show. I'll say that. I'll say that and that alone. I have a very exciting announcement, ladies and gentlemen. I've been excited to announce this for a while. It is now official. Alex Jones will be not just attending, but being a keynote speaker of the Christ is King America After Trump 3-day conference being held by NXR Studios. Alex Jones has now been confirmed as a speaker in addition to myself, Joel Webbin. You've got JP Sears is going to be there, James Fishback, Brian Suave, Eric Kahn, Calvin Robinson, Dale Partridge, Alex Stein, Joshua Hames, and Alex Jones himself. NXR announces Alex Jones for Christ is King America After Trump Conference. So Alex will be there. I'll be giving a keynote speech as well as, I believe, participating in at least one roundtable with us there, which is very exciting. And as you know, Alex doesn't do many events. Frankly, there's not many worth doing. This one certainly is worth doing. It's probably the most important conversation to be having right now. What is going to happen after Trump? And, you know, anytime I talk about this to people, they seem insulted. Like if they're Trump supporters, they like get insulted. But it's like, guys, it doesn't matter if you love Trump or hate him. He's not going to be president much longer. Like that's just inevitable. Whether you like it or not, you have to prepare for what comes next. Right? Don't you have to prepare? So I'm very excited, to do this conference with Alex. I'm already writing my speech, because I'll be giving a speech as well there. So November 12th through 14th, it's in Dallas, Texas, technically Irving, but it's right there in Dallas, just minutes from two airports there. It's the Irving Convention Center is where it'll be held. So massive, very fancy, very high tech and modern venue that we'll be doing this conference. And it's going to be a very special time. And, you know, even just from doing the debates last week, I'm sure if you're watching the show after, just talking about truly the experience of just in-person contact with people like Viva Fry. Viva Fry, I have liked and known for years and for years. He's come on the show. We've interacted on X, you know, talked to him, you know, in between interviews or whatever. like the guy, really like the guy, know the guy. But I swear, 24 hours of in-person just hanging out, getting dinner, taking Ubers to the studio, just like, is literally more valuable than 10 years of online contact. So if you're feeling black-pilled, if you're feeling hopeless, might I suggest this is a cure for that. This is a white pill for you. This is an opportunity to actually be involved with something in real life, serious people that really want to make political change, that really are dedicated to rescuing this country here in our final hour, and are trying to do everything we can in our limited capacities to bring that about. And we genuinely hope that you can join us there and join us on this mission. You got to go to newchristianright.com/conference. That's newchristianright.com/conference to get your tickets. Get them now while you can, and you can use the promo code Harrison, all caps, to get 20% off. You can also use Alex Jones to get 20% off. But either way, it's going to be an absolutely massive and incredibly fun weekend of events in November. Get your tickets now while you can. And of course, support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com, the new ivermectin and mebendazole combo treatment is available at 1776rx.health. That's 1776rx.health. Folks, there's one thing that this whole show should have made clear to you at this point. It is that you got to treat your parasites, folks. You got to get rid of your parasites. They'll destroy you from within. So see what it can do for you. Go to thealexjonesstore.com or 1776rx.health. That's 1776rx.health. And of course, oh, that's great. You get a free tub of cooking tallow, absolutely free. Wait, what do you have to get? What do you have to get the cooking tallow? That's huge. All orders over $99 get a free tub of cooking tallow right now. Optimal Human cooking tallow on sale, or you can get it for free with your purchase at thealexjonesstore.com. Turns out we still have some concealed carry packs. We must have gotten more in stock because I thought those things were going to sell out in like 24 hours. TheAlexJonesStore.com, that is your one-stop shop for truth, justice, and the American way. And of course, it keeps me absolutely free. I literally do not have to care about what anybody thinks, about what I say. I don't have to. All I have to do is be right. All I have to do is fulfill your expectation as our audience of telling the truth and bringing you information you don't see anywhere else. And that is literally my only goal here. So it's always kind of humorous to me when people accuse us of taking money or having ulterior motives. It's like we actually kind of handicapped ourselves. We actually set up a system that like we're just incentivized to tell the truth. And even if we didn't want to, like we kind of have to. We kind of have to. In the same way, you know, when I take calls, it's like I'm sort of setting myself up. If I want to try to pull something off on people, but then I go, hey, give us a call if you disagree. It's like I can't lie in that situation. Not that I'd want to, but we literally, and we're unique in this. We're totally unique in this. Other places have other ways they get money. But for the Alex Jones Network, we have set it up to where we are incentivized. If we want to keep going, we got to tell the truth. We got to not try to pull one over on you. We got to be clear about what we believe and why we believe it. And if we don't, then you probably won't trust us anymore. You probably will watch somebody else. It means you won't see the great products that we have, which means you won't buy them, which means we go down. So even if we wanted to try to pull one over on you, we literally have precluded that possibility for ourselves. It's brilliant. It's kind of a brilliant system, actually. It makes every accusation about whatever, Qatar or Israel or whatever else, just kind of ridiculous. Kind of very ridiculous. All right, so we just saw a video of a Muslim guy very clearly celebrating, like he's got the numbers. He knows, right? And doesn't this kind of remind you of the story I always tell of, you know, the people in Europe talking to my friend who's Lebanese, but he's Christian, but he looks Arab. So they would say to him, we have this much of this town. We have this much of this town. We just got elected mayor of this town. We're taking over, brother. Like when they talk amongst each other, it's not secret. It's not subtle. They're sort of getting out over their skis a little bit, I think, announcing this before they've actually made any real inroads into America. They've been lulled into a false sense of security by the complacency of the average American that won't last much longer if we can actually tell the truth and spread the news about this. And we've got people taking action against this. And again, the key to our survival as a nation, as the American nation, is determined by our willingness or not to ruthlessly apply our own laws, ruthlessly and without apology stand up for ourselves, and just say no to people that hate us and want to destroy us. It's as simple as that. Just literally just getting over the fear of being like, no, you can't have our country. Sorry. That's it. I just solved all of our problems right there. If the American people can manage, can muster the testicular fortitude to, when looking at a, like, I don't know, 45-year-old rapist from Africa, say, no, you can't come in. Go away. Or a crying woman or child. But whoever, just go away. We don't want you and we don't need you and we have no obligation to change our laws to benefit you. Why would we do that? That's crazy. You wouldn't ask anybody else to do that. Nobody else would be stupid enough to comply. Let's go to clip 21 here. It's from another from Wall Street Apes. I get a lot of content from, it turns out. Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner and gubernatorial candidate Andy Gibson says he has a proposal to outright ban Sharia law in Mississippi. Great. Let's do it. This should already be done. I mean, you can't have an ulterior law code that's contradictory and at odds with the actual legal law code. So yeah, let's just pass this law. Here it is.
The way it always begins is a very slow, very quiet infiltration, and then over time, earning votes, earning land, and then eventually implementing this kind of religious law, not only around the world, but here in America.
We have the First Amendment, which protects freedom of religion, and it also requires the anti-establishment of religion. You can't establish a state religion in Mississippi. And the types of things that I hear Andy Gibson talking about run afoul of the spirit of the First Amendment.
I don't even know why we're still talking about Islam in America. It needs to just be outright banned, and it's just that simple. Is Islam compatible with the U.S. Constitution? Yes or no? The answer is no, it is not compatible with the U.S. Constitution, because Islam is not a religion. Islam is government. Islam is a society. It is a society of rules. That is the religion.
He's exactly right. I'd say I don't think there's any First Amendment barrier to banning Sharia law. I think you could absolutely do that. I think you would run into trouble trying to ban an actual religion, but I think it's worth the shot. I think you can try it. I think you should try it. Yeah, why not? Why not just give that a try? And the thing is, banning Sharia law is kind of insufficient, because what does that even really mean? I mean, we do have a lot of circumstances here in America where people run their own sort of courts, right? The Jewish community has this, where they will go and they'll settle marriages and divorces and do the things that typically you go to a courthouse to do. And that would be, I mean, they'll do it internally. Islam has the same thing. It's kind of hard to force somebody out of that. It's not necessarily the healthiest thing, but I can understand why it would be difficult to stop you from, essentially just private agreements, right? Hey, we have a dispute and we both trust this religious figure to resolve it for us, and we will abide by his ruling. So you can't really, you know, well, what am I going to do? You can't do that. No, you can't find a administrator you both agree with to settle a dispute. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it gets a little into the weeds a bit. So there is a lot of that. However, it's obviously not enforced. Like, the First Amendment, you know, obviously I would consider every bill or act or rule against anti-Semitism a direct violation of the First Amendment, since incumbent with freedom of religion is freedom to criticize a religion. We just read a story about a school district putting all their kids on a bus and sending them to be indoctrinated into Islam. They never object to that. Apparently the First Amendment doesn't stop that. It would stop it if it was a church. If you suggest taking all the kids to a church to be given Bibles and talked to by a priest about why they should be Christian, it would just never happen. because people would know you're not supposed to do that because of the First Amendment. But they do it for Jews and they do it for Muslims. And so maybe there's something, you know, we need to fix here. And again, the First Amendment was written at a time that they were just a few generations removed from the Civil War in England, which had Protestants and Catholics burning each other by the hundreds, if not thousands, all over the country. And that's what they were trying to avoid. But the idea that we'd have pockets of Muslims coming in, it's just ridiculous. Let's go to clip 47 here. This, I mean, it's the same thing in Australia. It's the same thing everywhere. And this goes into my theory about what is the actual plan for immigration overall. Like, I don't think immigration's ever going to end. I don't think it's ever going to end. It's another thing that, you know, people just need to, you just need to understand the numbers game. We've tried to explain over and over, every single person in Europe could be replaced with an Indian person, and there would still be a billion Indians in India trying to get into Europe. Okay? There is no point at which there will be an equilibrium reached, which people will stop coming, at which people will say, okay, white people, you've had enough abuse. Your numbers are dwindling enough now. We can all stop. We all agree. We're all going to stop our genocide. Okay? You know, like, that's just never going to happen. And sometimes they'll tell you that verbatim. Let's go to clip 47 here. This is from a television show in Australia. Let's watch.
What's the aim of multiculturalism?
That we all live together in a harmonious society.
Is it a journey? Is it
society?
A journey or a destination? When are we multicultural enough? When? When's the end?
It doesn't end, believe it or not.
Until what?
For you, history ends.
There's no more white people left?
History ends and doesn't change.
For you, history ends. For you white people, it'll be the end of your history, and then we'll remove you from history. You'll be excised from the human race in our memory. Multicultural, it'll never end. He's telling the truth. It will never end. It's never intended to end. So what does that mean? It means that we're on the path of South Africa. And I want to remind you, it's been several decades since South Africa ended apartheid, did everything they possibly could do to create a functional rainbow coalition, shared community of different races. I mean, if there's one example of a place that's like, you know, you ask a random leftist, whatever, like, what would you want our government to do? South Africa is probably the best example. We want a truth and reconciliation board. We want explicit laws like, you know, discriminating against white people. Like, South Africa gave them everything. They did everything that the progressive agenda dictates that they do. Since that time, their state has absolutely collapsed. It is a cesspit of violence and rape and murder and chaos. They can't even have nuclear weapons. They used to be a nuclear superpower. They used to be a nuclear power. They can't even have nukes anymore because they can't manage it. They can't keep the lights on half the day. And guess what? There are both still progressive leftist activists in South Africa. There are still white people crowing about the mistreatment of blacks in South Africa. They also still have a massive illegal immigration problem into South Africa. So imagine America continues down this path. America ends up like South Africa. We can't keep the lights on. We can't stop the roving gangs of mass murderers from boiling elderly people to death in their own homes. We all live behind 12-foot tall security fences with guard dogs and rifles next to our bed, and we're still being flooded with immigrants. This never ends, folks. And it's not supposed to end. It's supposed to become a cycle. It's supposed to become a laundry cycle in which exports from the first world, our surplus is sent to the third world, keeping their population extremely high, while the first world population is crushed spiritually, chemically, medically, so that you can import people from the third world, deracinate them, ply them with liquor and alcohol and drugs and everything else poisoning the Western world. Within a generation or two, they'll be no longer, you know, a member of their own ethnicity, they'll have melded into some sort of deracinated, infertile slave class, and then they'll die out within a couple generations. Again, it's not hard. It's not hard to take people from some Muslim commune in Africa, plop them in America, show them the OnlyFans, and, it's kind of hard to resist. You got to actually have a substantial cultural momentum to resist the perversions and the temptations of the Western world. So they'll fall for them. They'll be given the same treatment white people are. Then a couple generations, they'll die out and they'll bring in a whole bunch of other people. And that way, you'll just have a population in Europe and all over the world is just in this constant state of movement where nobody ever is like, this is our land. We've been here for generations. Nobody's going to have generational claim to their land. Nobody's going to be able to organize like a group of people and say, hey, we are all this type of person. We have to act together. You'll have a little bit of these people, a little bit of these people. They'll all be at odds with each other. They'll never be able to combine. They'll, never make it more than a couple generations before they're liquidated and a new class of people is brought in that still may have some of the old school sort of conservative beliefs. They'll allow those to flourish in the global South to keep those birth rates high off the back of the surplus of the first world. And they'll be able to keep that a little bit. But once they get, pulled into the West, they'll be stripped of all of that and, folded into the globo homo, homogenized corporate world they're creating. And of course, the people who should be against this are in fact for it because they fall for the racist bullcrap. Let's go to clip 33 here. This is Bill Maher, saying he does not give a crap if whites become a minority because he, hates white people. Let's watch.
Honor killings, not letting women show their faces, polygamy, female genital mutilation. There's lots of stuff we don't do here, and it's not negotiable, and it's not white values.
Yes,
these are liberal values.
Those
people
are white.
Fought and died to establish them.
White people.
And it's not racist to say,
yes, it is.
If you want to come here to help form a more perfect union, great.
You have to be white.
But some things are too fundamental to change.
Like whiteness.
The separation of religion and state, for example.
Is a very
and
white
I would
concept.
Say the same thing to Christian nationalists.
What about Jews?
Democracy, not theocracy. Free speech, even about religion.
Who invented
Equal
that?
Rights for women, LGBT. That's America. And none of it.
White people.
None of this is available in Sharia law.
Or anywhere brown people rule.
Which a third of British Muslims want to see be the law in England. And you can't have both. You can't have England and Sharia law. And the left's reaction to Islamification is the worst that could happen from it is it will get right-wingers elected. Maybe, or maybe the worst that could come from it is in 20 years the UK is turning away gay cruise ships.
Oh, God forbid. God forbid you can't have gay cruises anymore. That's the worst thing that could happen.
You can, and I'm sure some of you are screaming Islamophobia, but that's just a bullshit word to cow people into not talking about this. This has nothing to do with non-whites becoming the majority. I don't
yes,
give
it does.
A about that. I don't give a about colors. White people, they're white. They're not pandas.
So what's that mean?
I care about liberal values being replaced by illiberal ones.
We can shut him up now. Again, he just, he has to go out of his way. He hates white people. If it was pandas, he would say, hey, they shouldn't be destroyed. Pandas have value to him. A race of Chinese bears, he would be outraged if they were being attacked and diminished like white people are. But they're not, so it's fine. It's just white people. It's just the people. I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, and maybe this is the key to all of this, is understanding, like, no, these are white values. Liberalism, it's a white value. Where else in the world do these things exist? They exist only and exclusively in white countries. Prove me wrong. Can you name literally anywhere else that liberalism exists? So maybe it's like a white thing, Bill. Maybe you should care about this. Maybe.
Hell is that?
I just got a call from Rob. He said he saw some goblin riding a crocodile lurking around our studio.
found you, Alex. My crocodile monsters and I are onto you now. There is nowhere left to run. Best damn day of my life.
Yeah, ain't it?
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
We have to fight for our sovereignty. We have to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there's a little bit of a psyop afoot.
Well, oh, I've said that the other day when I had you guys coming on. I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, you're fat, your own enemy. He does that to guests. It was like Theo Von, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, but didn't really really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gained back 10. But now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene Blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, you'll get Masterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs. That's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
It's completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff. It brings in the key sea minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. Talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals, it is the same molecular composition as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like this.
Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff but doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room. And we are going to stick with our topic of the day here. What I was saying at the end of that last segment was, you know, you don't have to necessarily have Sharia law actually enforced from a central authority. It sort of imposes itself on the population. So, I guess in Sharia law, you might have a law in a place like Saudi Arabia. It might be a law that, like, women can't go out by themselves. They have to have a male escort, or they have to wear a, you know, hood over their head, veil over their face. You might have actual laws that dictate that. But in England, in places that there are a lot of Muslims around, women will choose not to go out looking attractive. They will choose not to go out without a male escort because they fear that they'll be attacked if they don't. So you don't have to actually enforce it with police. You just allow this culture to flourish, and it sort of imposes itself by virtue of its mere presence. And of course, the schizophrenia of the people who are on the left but support Islam, it's complete madness, but it's a madness that you sort of see manifested everywhere that I think is even deeper than the religious stuff, the religious impulse. Like, you have stuff like this from Europa.com. TV broadcasters have been ordered to avoid showing female athletes' buttocks. Cameras quickly switch to tight shots of their upper bodies to comply with the new modesty rules. So clip 49, we can go ahead and just roll his B-roll here. But you'll see where, you know, the camera switches the instant that, you know, she stands up, because God forbid you see a track runner's legs, right? Which, yeah, I'm not, you know, it's not just like, well, I want to see the butts. You know, it's like, it's not about being furtive. It's about, like, what is this? What is it? We have a culture who, like, guys, pull up the Olympic opening ceremony from last year. You're going to have, like, a man with a beard in a dress twerking with a child in a mockery of the Last Supper. You, like, they embrace just the most degenerate, sexualized, blasphemous, disgraceful nonsense, but God forbid you see a woman in short shorts. You see what I mean? You're going to have OnlyFans setting up booths at college career fairs, encouraging young women to sell their bodies and become pornographers, but you're not going to show the track women's full bodies. Despite the fact there's nothing, like, sexual about what they're doing, they just happen to be attractive because they're fit. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a like, insanity going on here. There's a certain level of insanity. There's a certain level of just out of whackness. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like, in a reasonable sort of Christian mindset, Christian society, Christian world, it's like, you have women doing ballet and running track and wearing short skirts or bikinis at the beach because it's safe and because it's like, we actually appreciate beauty and we believe God gave us our bodies are beautiful and, you know, celebrating of God. And, like, you know, it's kind of up to you to not have bad thoughts. And, you know, what is it about seeing a woman? Like, you know, what's the deal? You can't handle seeing a beautiful woman? Like, you should be able to handle seeing a beautiful woman. It's kind of what we were all about for a while. It's like one of the main things about our culture that's allowed it to spread all over the world is the beauty, but also modesty of our women. There's a nice little balance there. Somehow we've gotten caught, and we are simultaneously being pulled in both directions where everything is becoming more lascivious, more, I don't know, sexualized all the time. While simultaneously, we have these weird, like, you know, the Me Too movement. It's now leading to this crap, where it's like you're afraid to show the female form in clothes on TV. You can't show the legs of track runners. That there's something weirdly Sharia about this. You know what I mean? There's something unChristian about it. There's something un-American about it, un-European about it. I mean, hell, compared to America, you know, Europe's a bunch of crazy hippies. I mean, America has a very strong sort of Protestant, prudish, you know, we were the ones with the, you know, Catholic board that had to approve movies and came with a rating system. I mean, there's sort of a prudish element in American society from its foundation with the Pilgrims and the Shakers and Quakers. I mean, you didn't have that in Europe. Europe, they got nude beaches and, you know. So, like, it's even weirder that this is Europe doing this. So Europe will now no longer show the female form during track meets. But if your 18-year-old daughter wants to sign up for OnlyFans, you can't stop her. Something weird here. Something weird going on. Something a little bit off about all of this. Something that we've talked about for a while. Often when I'll bring up the rates of like young people being intimate with each other. And it's like, how is it that at a time when like hardcore pornography is normalized, I can't even turn on network TV with my 5-year-old in the room because I don't know what they're going to show. It's going to be something traumatizing or sexualizing or something I don't want them to see. I can't even participate in normal American life. I can't even drive down the road without seeing a billboard with something disgusting on it. I can't drive down the road without seeing a bus with two men kissing and a big "get your HIV shot today" advertisement on it. Yet simultaneously, young people in high school are having less sex than they did in the 1950s. Something's gone horribly wrong here. You're telling me the time of sock hops and getting milkshakes at the diner with your sweetheart, they were like having more sex than kids today growing up in Sodom and Gomorrah? Something's gone horribly wrong here. That's my diagnosis. And here's a great example of it. Clip 22. This is a high school student filming their third day of senior year, what it looks like inside the classroom. Let's watch clip 22 here. First day of your third day of senior year. Literally not a single student is talking. Not a single student is interacting with one another. Every single student is just staring at their phones. Comment, y'all don't understand. High school was not like this. When I grew up, high school looks genuinely depressing. Yeah, our country is being demoralized. It's being demoralized in a number of different ways. But like, you understand that just fundamentally, this is a symptom of an illness. Put plain and simple. And I can try to diagnose that illness. I can try to provide a prognosis and a, you know, path to getting healed in all of this. But at the end of the day, you at least have to, at the bare minimum, recognize, like, this isn't just a natural consequence of, like, phones exist now. Oh, phones exist now, so every high school student has become a lobotomized zombie with no friends. What are you talking about? Phones existed when I was in high school. We had friends, we had energy, we made a commotion if the teacher wasn't there. These are a bunch of kids sitting in a classroom with no teacher, and they're all just staring at their own phones. Our connection with each other is being severed on purpose. Our humanity is being crushed. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Our psychic resonance is being deadened like a lead blanket. Meaning that our whole world is being torn apart. It's I don't know. It's all very weird to me. And again, to me the ideal setup really is like is the Christian one, where you go, look, here's the ideal. Here's what we're going for. Here's what we expect of you. You're human. We understand you might fall short, but as long as you're trying to achieve this goal, as long as you recognize that falling short of that is a problem that you can fix. And, you know, you think about just like sex before marriage. To me, the best thing is like, look, you want to wait till you're married. Tell your kids you're going to wait till you're married. You should wait till you're married. God wants you to wait till you're married. Are you going to actually wait till you're married? Chances are no. It's not the worst thing in the world. But for some reason, for some inexplicable, but every day, all day, all we do is try to explain how we got here. For some reason, we're being torn from either side, where half the country wants OnlyFans to be normalized, and, you know, 50% of young women are literally selling their bodies online. While we're simultaneously being pulled towards Sharia freaking law and putting women in trash bags and making it illegal to see their noses. This is crazy. This is nonsense. And it's all about destroying the foundational, fundamental, correct way of being, which was perfected in Europe and America. We were getting there. We were getting to where it was perfect. Something happened. Came to fruition around the 60s. These things happen in generations. But as we continue to talk about immigration and all this crap, I got so many videos. I'll read this first, because this story is just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. I see like 10 types of stories like this every single day, from Libertarian Gandalf at Libertarian Film on X. One of the brightest people I've ever met, got his PhD in philosophy from U Michigan in record time. Then he won a place at University of Chicago in a prestigious program to help undergrads, where they hired 1 in 1,000 applicants. But when he began going to the hiring sessions at various colleges, they told him point blank that they were not hiring any white men. None. That was the case everywhere. It changed him. He had previously been happy, optimistic, hardworking, ready to contribute in a big way. Afterwards, he was very bitter and wanted to hear nothing more about academia. I think he ended up being a high school tutor for a time, but I haven't heard anything since. So multiply this by like 10, 20 million, not just in academia, but in industries as well. And just try to imagine the true downstream impact that this is going to have in a couple generations. Our leadership in our country, on purpose and in a well-advertised fashion, deliberately excluded the most talented, the most productive, the most capable people in at least one generation. Meaning that you have simultaneously crippled your industry, crippled your prosperity, crippled these companies for actually being, and God only knows, you know, it's like these little things, but like I said, times 10 million. I mean, how many people that, you know, put them in the right spot, they come up with a brilliant idea, they fix a long-held problem, they just have that ambition or that genius that helps a company or an organization or whatever just take that extra step up. You just have no idea what we're missing out on. We have no idea who is being excluded and what impact that's having on our overall quality of life and place on the world stage. And then along with that, coinciding with that is the destruction of the people themselves and the guys themselves and the fact that they're not making families when they would. And when it's on top of being discriminated and hated and openly despised all around them, while simultaneously being excluded from power and excluded from contributing your talents to anything worthwhile, it's a shock. More people haven't gotten depressed or gone insane or blown things up or something. But at the end of the day, really, it's just, it's, you know, the demoralization on top of everything. A guy like this, a kid like this, bright enough, smart enough, motivated enough, he can just sort of cruise through. He doesn't have to, you know, people say this stuff, but I don't care about politics. I'm just going to do what I... But at a certain point, you run into the reality. And then it all, like, hits you at once, right? The reality of the world that you're in. And how literally your fate, your destiny has just been snuffed out by people who despise you because of how you were born and because of forces beyond your control and that you never benefited from. So I really hope that, like, for every one of these guys, every one of these forsaken, passed over geniuses, I hope they have a friend who can sit there and go, don't be dismayed. Don't be disheartened. Definitely don't be blackpilled. Understand you're at war. This is what happens at war. They're trying to destroy you. Do you know the most effective way for you to be destroyed is for you to believe that you've been destroyed? The most effective way to render you impotent is to convince you that you're impotent, is to string you along for a long time and then crush your hope at the very end. To demoralize you is to disenfranchise you, is to cripple you and take you out of action. Because then maybe, just maybe, all of the crap you have to deal with, you can, in your own mind, transform from an act of oppression and a force larger than your ability to comprehend, let alone face off and win. Instead, just see it as a challenge. See it as a confirmation of your power and the threat that you inherently pose to bad people. people who don't believe what they say, who don't believe in the equality crap they push, just understand it's all a lie. And while that can be confusing and that can be shocking, shouldn't be disheartening, should be invigorating. It's an opportunity for you to do the things that you've read about in fantasy books all your life, to stand up against a seemingly overwhelming force and to bring it down. Whatever you do, don't start playing video games. Do not start playing video games. I feel like I have a responsibility to do this, to say this sort of stuff. Because the right wing is just filled with grifters and frauds and... I don't know. It's like, as a father of three, I'm telling you, if you're playing video games, it's because your life is missing something. And you will get to a point, if you follow the right path, if you follow the right track, that you can play video games. You just literally choose not to because you got better things to do. Do not succumb to the dopamine trap. Let's go to clip five here. This is the type of content that comes out of the, quote, conservative Cato Institute. This is the Cato Institute, a supposedly conservative think tank. This is from Vincent James at DA Vincent James on X. Here's his arguing, the argument from the Cato Institute about the fate of the white middle class in this country. Let's watch.
I'm sure I'm going to both left and right, so I apologize. That the fetish for manufacturing is part of the general fetish for keeping white males of low education outside the cities in the powerful positions they're in the U.S. And that is really what's going on here. Because when you look at the costs of manufacturing, and Susan Houseman and her co-authors have done a lot, not of manufacturing, of trade, and job displacement and community, Susan Houseman and her co-authors have done a lot of work on this, and I'm sure she'll have a different view than I do. But when I look at the so-called costs of the China shock or the costs of the decline in manufacturing, I always think compared to what? For decades, there was enormous displacement of African Americans in this economy. Every time there was a recession, African American unemployment rates shot up much faster and higher than white unemployment rates. Single women were methodically excluded from the workforce, and especially if they became parents, or ghettoed in particular sets of jobs throughout the economy well through the 70s into the 80s. Displacements on large scales would happen when technology or trade broke through, like all the secretaries who got replaced by personal computers and other forms of office animation. Automation. And these kinds of churn, as the economists put it, never were decried. They never got political attention. They never got much notice. But when it started being the white male manufacturing people in the so-called heartland, which by definition was not urban, then suddenly this was a crisis.
Well, see, the difference between those, see, when a secretary is replaced by a computer or word processor, that's not a deliberate policy of the government that caused that to happen, or a deliberate policy of unelected but pseudo-governmental institutions like BlackRock, who, of course, handled the 2008 financial crisis, managed and, you know, brought about by these seemingly very smart people. When white men are deliberately excluded from the workforce, that's not just the natural consequence of the advancement of technology. That's a deliberate attack on white people. It is a political problem and therefore requires a political solution. And this guy's obviously Jewish, and I wonder if he would have the same, you know, feeling about Jews in Israel and their worthiness of being preserved. Because when you say keeping manufacturing is all about supporting, what he's essentially saying is about supporting the American middle class, which happens to be white men, then the answer for me is like, yeah, what's the problem with that? Yes, we want to actually support our people. We want to actually provide our people with good jobs that pay good money and are secure and aren't stripped away from them so they can be offshored to India so you can pocket the difference in what you save. And that's not helping anybody. This is just pure, unadulterated, numbers go up nationalism where like all they care about is the GDP, and white people having a higher standard of living makes them more expensive, so screw them. No other race would be expected to put up with this. Nobody else would be treated like this. You don't deserve to be treated like this. But you will be, unless you stop it. Okay? Unless you combat these people verbally and nonviolently, they're just going to keep destroying you and literally call your continued survival a fetish. That's what he called it. He said that the desire to preserve American manufacturing is a, quote, fetish for keeping white males with low education in powerful positions. So I guess the offshoring of manufacturing is really a fetish for destroying white males with low education and eliminating them from the powerful positions where they are. Seems like you could go both directions with that. And this is a guy who's he's not one of them, so why should he care? He's not a, you know, low education white male from the Midwest, so why should he care that their lives and towns and history is being destroyed? He gets to save a couple pennies on every dollar. So worth it. Definitely worth it to sell you out absolutely and forever. Only got time for one of these. Let's go to clip 65 here. We're going to end on a high note. We're going to end on a fun video here. This is from Kim Katie USA. Let's go ahead and roll clip 65 now. Okay, here we have a van fleeing from law enforcement. It's a high-speed chase. Runs into a car, tries to run a red light. The van flips, and there we have one of the passengers getting out. And three of the passengers getting out. So we got six guys in this one van. And they're attempting to run away. Camera following them. So we got seven guys. I see seven. The guy in the other car is trying to chase them. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 guys in this car? We got 12 guys. 13, 14. I see a couple more. 15, 16, 17, 18. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. The camera turned away because they thought they were done. They ain't done, folks. 28 illegal immigrants were in that one van. A van carrying 28, a probably 6-9 person van was holding 28 illegal immigrants who scattered like cockroaches when you turn the light on after flipping their van. 28 people in a single van. I just thought of a way we could do deportations really efficiently. Tell the Department of Homeland Security to get in contact with me. We need, I think, 4 or 5 vans. We could do this.
Planet Earth, filter your water. Stop turning my frog friends gay. This I command.
The Alex Jones Store.com. Fight the globalist takeover now.
A scarlet martini before breakfast? You minx. Are you trying to outdo me in corruption? Or shall we make it a team effort?
Of course not, darling. This is Methylene Red from the AlexJonesStore.com.
The Ultra Methylene Red, madame. Bold, refined, and unapologetically potent. It optimizes cellular energy at the deepest level, delivers razor-sharp cognition, and ignites a warm, invigorating rush that spread through every vein.
Come on now, bandit! We gotta get this truck on the road!
We gonna do what they say can't be done.
Let's get a move on.
We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound and what a bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some devil mind your brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we're bringing back no matter what.
We're gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.